Molly?
Yes. I'd like to pull
8.3.2.
Is that the resolution? Yes. Wait, say it again. 8.3.2. No, 8.3.3.2. Okay, thank you. Any others? Okay, next item is public comment for items that are not on the agenda. No one here to speak? Okay, superintendent's report.
Good evening. It was requested that I try to do my superintendent's report with a PowerPoint. We'll try that tonight and see how that works to support us all. I've also organized the report around the district goals. So as I was looking at what I've done since our last board meeting, one of the important pieces of work that we've been doing is follow-up to the multi-tiered systems of support retreat. And I've had two very lengthy meetings with Frank and Molly and Graves' friend, representative principals, and the Ed Services team to talk about the recommendations that came from all of the people who participated in that day. We've been looking at the recommendations in our four strategic focus areas, thinking about how they can inform our LCAP development moving forward. And we're not done yet because there's a lot of information to synthesize, but we're getting closer and we're going to spend time at our leadership and principals meeting Thursday and Friday to finalize some things, and we'll get back next steps to the team that worked on the retreat. It's been a really great process in looking at our LCAP resources and our LCAP budget and how do we align those resources to best create tiers of support for our kids that are focused moving forward. Last week was the CIS Leadership Symposium. Because of events in the community, I didn't get to be down there for very much of it, but the part that I was good. And I was able to meet with Frank and Marianne and Julia and representatives from San Francisco Unified School District on Wednesday evening, and we were looking at the work that they're doing with English learners because they're getting some significant movement and growth, and we had some really engaging conversations and about ELs, but also it led to us talking about dual enrollment and CTE and all kinds of other things. But it was a great opportunity to network, and I know that Marianne called me on the way back Friday. She was so inspired. There was lots of good information, lots of good resources, and district work from other districts that can help inform ours. Under goal number two, creating positive, engaging school environments. Obviously, over the last 2 weeks, we've had lots of conversations about school safety. We had the incident at Bayview last week where a student had made threats, and that created a lot of fear already existed in the community following the Florida shootings, and that raised a lot more fear for folks. We had a parent meeting the following day, and I want to thank Claudia and Sheila and Patty for attending that parent meeting. Had an opportunity for parents to meet with the chief of police and me and the principal and Eileen to talk about what we're doing to keep our campuses safe. And it's also an opportunity for us to review protocols and procedures as a district. We've changed our leadership meeting agenda for tomorrow to spend some time talking about that. Also had a conference call on Monday with all of our principals regarding our students are planning some political action. Our middle school and high school students are planning political action on March 14th, the month anniversary of the Florida shootings. And the way the law works, if students leave class, it is an unexcused absence, but we are going to work to support keeping them safe and giving them a place to express their First Amendment rights to free speech and expression. And if they walk off campus, we will provide some supervision to keep them safe. With Casey's help, I got out some information to staff too about what our roles are as employees of the district and what our employee roles is in regards to political speech. But I also want to acknowledge that our teachers have a lot of feelings, strong feelings about what's going on, and our leaders have a lot of strong feelings about what happened in Florida and about where we're, you know, how we keep our schools safe and the legislation that corresponds with that. So it's been a lot of intense conversations over the last 2 weeks, and I really want to appreciate everyone engaged in that. I want to appreciate our partners in the police department who also work really hard to partner with us to keep our campuses safe. Goal number 4, we'll work to develop a highly collaborative professional culture focused on supporting effective teaching. Tonight on the agenda, we have our agreement with the GSCFT, and I just want to acknowledge again my gratitude for the partnership and collaboration to make Santa Cruz City Schools a great place to work and learn, and appreciative of the work that we do together with all of our bargaining units. Also going on right now are a lot of staffing meetings and planning for 2018-19. The HR team has been putting in all kinds of hours to analyze what current needs are, what needs are for next year, where the delta is, and how we work to keep as many of our employees as we can, even though we are decreasing in size for next year. The other goal that I did some work on in the last 2 weeks was goal number 6. Maintaining strong communication and partnerships with our diverse community. Monday night, we had our third parent leader meeting for the year. Such a great group. It was about half and half monolingual Spanish-speaking parents and English-speaking parents. Great collaboration between all of our parents. Talking about, we talked about student safety. That wasn't the original plan for the meeting, but we did spend some time talking about student safety. And they had an opportunity to give input on the LCAP, and they, there's some consistent themes that run through our stakeholder input for LCAP development, and it's affirming of many of the things we're doing, and the things they'd like to see more of are some of the things that we've talked about, counseling more in-school tutoring supports, those kinds of things. It was a valuable conversation. On Monday, I had a meeting with Mayor Terrazas and the new Consul General from the Mexican Consulate and some of his staff. We talked about bringing the mobile consulate to to provide services for our families. It's coming to Live Oak in the spring, and they're going to bring the mobile consulate to our schools in November. Of this next year. We also talked about other ways that we collaborate with the consulate. They asked me, I got an email today asking me to be on their scholarship committee, but they're meeting next Wednesday. And we have some things happening on the morning of the 14th that I think I need to be here for. So it's been a good 2 weeks, and I hope this is a helpful way to look at this moving forward.
Student report.
Santa Clara prom is coming up. 2 weeks go until next week, so there's been a lot of discussion about outfits and people getting excited for that. Also, CCS, the boys' basketball team is deep in CCS. I believe they're scheduled to go to NorCal as well, so that's been really exciting. A lot of school support at Salinas last night. The game there, so that was cool to see. There have been a lot of students, including myself, that have been organizing around the March 14th student walkout, and so that has been interesting and exciting. The play, the theater production Heathers, the musical, debuted this past weekend, and it was amazing, and I went Friday night, opening night, and there were so many people, and it was more people than I'd ever seen go to a play, and it was really, really fun, and everybody was really really talented in it. And yeah, the last few shows are Friday and Saturday. Everybody should go. It's really good. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to mention that and commend the Women's March folks have reached out to Casey and to the school district for the 14th to do a register students, opportunity to register students to vote during March and free period at all three of our high schools, and they're working throughout the county to do that as well as another opportunity for students to express their opinions and get pre-registered. 16 and 17-year-olds can pre-register to vote. So, and that's it.
In the last 2 weeks, I've been approached by several parents just wanting to have a conversation around their feelings in the Florida shooting and what they are hoping for our students in general. They know that there is no one solution. They know that there are no millions of solutions. They're just scared and tired and frightened. So I wanted to acknowledge that. I attended the Bayview parent incident meeting. Again, it has been bumpy. It's just a nice way to say a couple of weeks for people feeling supported and safe. I also wanted to acknowledge and talk about on our last board meeting, we talked about student engagement, and I wanted to apologize to students reps Smith and Ms. Martinez, because we had the conversation, but we didn't really reach, or I didn't, to ask you what you think. So I'm really hoping that you'll take it home at any time and have anything help us shape some of the decisions that we're making for policy around your daily life. Thank you.
I just want to take a second to give a couple of thank yous. The first to all those who were involved with the GSCFT negotiations, the teachers union team and administrative team. I think it's just great that there can be such a collaborative effort, and I thank particularly Molly and Casey for showing us the way that negotiations can be done with high level mutual respect for each other, and it produces great labor management rapport, and that's such a baseline necessity for great teaching and learning environments. So thank you for all of that effort. And then also a thank you to the principal at Bayview and Chris and others for handling that delicate student behavior issue at Bayview. And again, it takes a lot of time and effort to communicate so well. I really appreciate you, Chris, for doing that so beautifully. When safety issues are in the front, like you were saying, there's a lot of fear, and there are a lot of communities to reach out to, you know, the students, the parents, the broader community, the board, staff, teachers, and that all takes a lot of time and effort, and thank you for the heartfelt way that you approached all that. So I'm just very impressed with the collaborative work on the negotiations and all the great communications on that safety issue. So thank you very much. Thank you.
I just want to thank you also for how the whole Bayview incident was handled. And I know that you were supposed to be somewhere else all the time. I was hoping that you got some rest in the middle of all of this. I think that the only thing I wanted to mention was I am hearing a lot from the community. What struck me is what you wrote in the letter you wrote seemed to me like it covered everything. But when people started to ask, they were coming and they were saying things like, well, why don't we have counselors in our schools? And I don't know if it takes an incident like this to bring it up, or if there's something else we need to do, and other small things like, do we have locks that lock on the inside and the outside? You know, people are asking a lot of questions that we have this large plan, but there seems to be all these small things that they don't quite know that we might consider adding to it in terms of what's on the website, because I was surprised at what wasn't known in terms of the things we've done in the last, you know, several years to really increase some of the mental health help we have, and, you know, think about with the bond. You started to say it in the meeting where you said, well, you know, we have the bond because people were asking about how are we going to fix our schools. But then somebody interrupted you and it didn't get said. And I think people are not necessarily making that connection either. So I just wanted to pass that on. But I really appreciate everything you did.
Okay, well, I would also like to say how impressed I've been by the actions of our staff and leaders during these challenging times. I think it's, yeah, I've just been very impressed. Thank you. Our next item is the minutes, approval of the minutes for February 14th.
Excuse me, Madam President, I just want to make sure that everybody realizes that I did make a little revision,
right.
An additional sentence from Dr. Rainey, and so they are slightly different than the originally posted minutes, but I don't think that they, you know, will...
But we can make it as presented. Yeah. As adjusted.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Just say as adjusted.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move approval.
A second?
Second.
Student recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? 7-0.
Thank you.
Okay, our next item is the consent agenda. Are there any items that members would like pulled from the consent agenda? Okay, Jeremy?
Yeah, I want to pull 8.1.9.3.
Okay. And Patty?
That was the item for me, and I just have a comment on 8.1.6.
Okay. Anything else?
So we'll move 8.1.9.3 to
8.3.2.4
is what it'll become.
8.3.2.4.
Yeah.
So, Patty?
I just wanted to thank the County Office of Education for supporting the students for the Black Student Union at Santa Cruz High and paying for the leadership convention for all the students and their chaperones. I think that's a wonderful reach. And I am happy that the opportunity is there because of them. So thank you to Michael Watkins and the COE.
Do we have a motion?
Move adoption of the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay. And it's a roll call. A student?
Aye.
Thank you. Right. Our next item is 8.1.9.1, and we have a report.
No, that's part of the contract.
Part of the contract. Okay.
So now we're going to do a report of actions in closed session.
8.2.9.
Oh, that's right. Oh, gosh. Okay. Dee Dee, sorry.
The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update regarding GSCFT negotiations. The Board discussed and gave direction regarding the SCCS Association of Managers. The Board discussed and gave direction regarding the SCCS Confidential Unit. And the Board of Trustees heard information and took action regarding liability claim number 551020.
You and now the items to be discussed, and that's staff report on education services, LCAP.
Frank, you're connected to
user. This is my classroom voice. Tonight we have the good fortune and the full excitement of providing an update on our instructional coaches. We have both of our directors here, elementary with Marianne Robb and secondary with Julia. It's Julia.
You're looking at her standing.
Oh, okay, good. So,
thank you. Come on, folks.
Well, I'm honored tonight.
So I'm Joseph Murray, and I am the English Language Development Coach for secondary. And with this slideshow, we're trying to give you a feel for our vision and impact as coaches. So we worked together to co-construct this vision that both guides our work and it describes our work. And we are working to build educator-teacher efficacy, which is the sense that I'm responsible for the outcomes that I get with my students, and I can change my instruction always to improve those outcomes. It's about me and my instructional moves and what I do, and I feel empowered to improve learning for my students. I feel a sense of efficacy. And to increase their capacity, to teacher capacity, to teach to the depth and the rigor of the Common Core standards. So this is our vision guiding us into that.
Okay, my name is Elizabeth Lindsley. I'm the English Learner Instructional Coach for elementary. Good evening. Something that coaches do is we help teachers bring research-based practices to life in their classroom for their students. And since 2012, there have been major shifts in education, Common Core, English Language Arts and Math, 2012 ELT standards in the state of California, Next Generation Science standards, our nation's social studies standards, and then there are all the frameworks of how you implement this into your classroom. So one of our focuses in the district right now is visible learning, and that's something that leadership and site administrators, as well as our directors, are focused on. And so how do you take, you know, all of these books and put them into something that works for your children in your classroom? So coaches, we're able to go and translate the current theory that maybe we've been taking massive online open course. Maybe our science leads have been really working on how do we take ELD and integrate it into our science. So we take that theory and that research and then bring it to the classroom so it makes sense to optimize student learning.
Hi, I'm Michelle McKinney. I'm the elementary math coach. Nice to see you guys.
Okay.
So we coaches grow district-wide collective efficacy by bringing visible learning tools and strategies to teachers in multiple ways. So we work with professional learning communities to create and maintain efficient structures, protocols, and focus in order to best meet the needs of all the students. We serve individual teachers by assisting with the transition to the rigors of the Common Core State Standards, the English Language and English Language Development Framework, and the New Generation Science Standards by modeling lessons, facilitating peer observations, and sharing resources. We elementary coaches plan and implement 3 full days of professional development for all the teachers at all the elementary grade levels that connect our current content focus, which is math this year, with language learning so that all students have access to the curriculum. So in effect, coaches build teacher capacity so that teachers can use research-based practices and tools that lead to student achievement gains.
Good evening, board members, Superintendent Monroe. Thanks for having us. My name is Gino Arugi. I'm the K-12 Educational Technology Coach. This slide speaks to district goal number 3, and I'll paraphrase. Demographics should not determine the academic outcomes of our students. And I take that one step further by saying, nor should it determine the digital divide, the digital proficiency of students. Also, excuse me, number 4, to develop a highly collaborative professional culture, Actually, Michelle just said it, so I'm going to be repeating it. We work with professional learning communities, campuses, grade level teams, as well as department teams, Google University participants, individual site leads, in my case, the tech leads, as well as just individual teachers, to assure that these outcomes, to improve these outcomes for our students, both academically and, like I said, the digital environment. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Naima Leal. I'm the K-12 Special Education Instructional Coach. So this slide is really around the impact of coaching. So this is a study that was conducted. It was a 5-year longitudinal study. It covered 20 school districts and 80 schools. And it really focused on the whether peer coaching increased implementation of new skills. So the way that we kind of workshop this with our group is, if you look at the workshop group, what this is showing you is, if a new skill is introduced to a teacher, and we see this as kind of like a one-hit professional development, maybe around student accountable talk. If it just a new skill is introduced to a teacher, 10% of teachers will implement that skill in their classroom. With the addition of the tenets of peer coaching, so modeling, much like what Michelle was saying, modeling practice and feedback, you increase incrementally the implementation of that skill in the classroom by 2-3%. However, when you embed peer coaching along with all that, 95% of teachers embed that skill in their classroom. So really what this tells us is that job-embedded professional development not only improves teacher practice and builds teacher capacity, but impacts student learning. And that is, again, backed by, this is Elena Aguilar's research as well, and Jim Knight's research. So this is a graphic that we have adopted from the Santa Cruz Silicon Valley New Teacher Project. It really resonated with us as coaches, and it essentially just shows at any given time, we are between a lot of these stances. Coaches play a lot of roles during the day and during the week. I was looking at this and reviewing for today and thinking, wow, I was a lot of those today. Mm-hmm. And so we really play a powerful role during our work to build capacity and increase student learning. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Allison Blackwell. I'm the secondary math coach. And I wanted to share with you some of the data that we've been collecting this year. So as you can see, this is the sites that we've been serving this year, and we have a far reach as all the sites that we've been touching this year. Next slide. So this goes to how often that we are working with our coaches. So that includes teachers, different PLCs, administrators. And this was a survey that we gave, and you can see from our results that the majority is that we work with is monthly or less with our coaches, and we really want to work on improving that and getting more reaching more often with teachers, because as Naima just mentioned, that the importance of the job embedded ongoing professional development is critical. So we want to try to increase the amount of time we have with our coaches.
Hi, I'm Heather Murphy. I know most of you guys. I'm the science coach. I'm truly the sort of specialist in the integration of literacy and math and applications to understanding both the world around us and the world within us. And so I'm here to talk about present to you guys a couple of the pieces of data that we've been collecting. Each of us individually have been collecting data that's informed our work. But Marianne had really suggested that it would be important for you guys to see both the sites that we're working at, the context with which we're working, and how are teachers feeling about the work that we're doing here. And I think each of those speaks to a particularly important issue for not just the teachers, but really for the students and our whole district. The first one, you know, that going across sites, that's really about coherence. How do we as a district have a coherent vision? How do we, as we're doing visible learning, what does it look like in one site? How is that shared in another site? It's really the coaches and the students that move from site to site and grade level to grade level and between the district office and the classroom on a regular basis. So I think that first one, the sites that we visit really attends to coherence. The second one, and this one's perfect, this idea that what we can differentiate what we do based on what time do teachers have to work with us. So one of the, so we can be really responsive to what their needs are. If individual teachers are wanting to work with us, we can do that. If it's instead the need is for a site level or district level meeting, we can meet those needs. But we make really good use of that time. I was just at the state level learning about the new CAST exam. I can bring that straight from Sacramento to the classroom. And so that makes us basically much more responsive, and it really improves clarity throughout the state, I think. And then finally, this last one, I got it off order. So essentially, I had three messages here, but we got a little bit changed because I didn't know if I could make it back from Sacramento in time. So the first one I would say is this idea of how do we build coherence? The second piece is how do we differentiate based on teacher need and student need? And a coach can do that. You can individually, if you have a particular question, I just met the other day, three students, two from El Salvador and one from Mexico, and that teacher had her hands full, and we were working together with how do we bring science and ELD into the same class for that particular group of students. And then finally, how do we respond to the fact that teachers have a limited amount of time? They can't meet for hours with professional learning. So how can we meet with them for an hour if they've got the time, let them work on it, chew on it, come back and meet with them later as needed? Okay.
Thank you for your kind attention. That concludes our presentation.
Okay. Questions? Jeremy?
I'd really like to thank you all for presenting. I'm a big fan of the coach model because I think in a district, as virtually all districts are, with limited resources, it provides us the biggest, we'll forgive the expression, bang for the buck. It just does. It makes sense, which is not to say that the RTI model doesn't. But the RTI model, as we know, is site-specific. Whereas the coach model is either K-12, as Gino pointed out, or it's all elementary, or it's all secondary. And so I think this district, this isn't actually a question, sorry. I think this district desperately has needed this for a long time, and you keep talking about coherence or fidelity, or, you know, but the bottom line is that going from site to site and sort of disseminating or attempting to sow the seeds for best practice, that's what you do. And I think it's really very exciting for me to see it happen. I guess I'm thinking out loud now, and I'm being a little long-winded, so forgive me. What I think I would also like to hear, because after all, there's eight of you, and so there's, let's say, $900,000 a year. That's a lot of money, and I think it's well spent. I think one of the things I'd like to see in future presentations, now that you've established this baseline talking to us, is I'd like to hear from some teachers who have been helped by this process. And we don't need to hear from a teacher in every area, so we don't need nine separate presentations, but two or three, you know, because I can imagine, as Heather was pointing out, that, and some of you have alluded to as well, that different teachers will have different needs. You'll have a teacher who's incredibly busy and just needs to meet with Gina one time to figure out how the heck I can do something with Google Drive. And then you'll have another teacher who really doesn't get a certain kind of new standard, whether it be science or ELD or how to do this. And that might be, correct me if I'm wrong, a 5 or 6 or 7 time repeat session. So that would be really helpful to me and I think the other board members to sort of round out our picture of what you do. But for my knowledge, this is the first time we've seen all of you. So I'd really like to thank you all very, very much. I see Mr. Martinez there. He's not been called up.
In case you have a question,
no question, George. Who'll win the World Cup this year? But anyway, thank you. Thank you so much for being here, and I really appreciate the presentation. And if I could have one suggestion is that next time we could hear from some teachers who are served. I think that's logical. Thank you.
Okay. Dee Dee, you're next.
I also want to reiterate what Jeremy said and thanking you so much for taking your time to come here and share these data with us. I think what these data tell me is that the peer coaching is having a high touch rate, meaning that you are having lots of contact with the teachers across sites, across disciplines, across grade levels. That's very exciting. And you also, your data demonstrates that you have a deep reach. So you're really getting down in there and working with teachers in multiple ways, a diversity of ways, and that's exciting to see, and I thank you for that data. What I hope to see in the future, and I'd like to kind of build off of what Jeremy is saying, you mentioned that there's, based on the literature out there, that these practices have impact on teacher efficacy, and I think there are lots of measures out there that you could collect that data. So in addition to hearing from the impact on individual teachers, perhaps you could collect some quick data on just what is the efficacy impact, because I believe it's there, but it'd be exciting to see that data. The other thing that I hope to see in the future, and I know it's premature to do this now, but you started by saying these, and there's a belief and there's a literature to support this, your goal is that this work that you're all doing that's very important is going to support learning and improve outcomes for all students. Mm-hmm. So at some point, I would be excited to see the data about that impact on student learning, because I think it's there. And again, we'd love to see the data that supports that so that we can continue to support your efforts in what we do. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sheila, next.
I actually have two things on.
There's not another one yet.
And I have to comment that, Mary Ann, I'm just amazed at how organized you were that you got all this in. You got everybody.
This is a great team.
Yeah. I started out thinking I really wanted to try to visualize what you do in a day. And I got a little bit of a sense of that now, but that's something that I also would like to know more about, hear more about. And then when it showed how good the embedding, the coaching was, I was like, well, why does the coaching make that much difference? And then I realized it's because you work your friggin' butts off. Because, I mean, once you started to talk about everything you're doing, first of all, any of us who've, you know, been teaching knows that this is what works. But also that you're doing so many different things. So you're in so many different roles, and your roles, the roles you take are responding to the needs. What a great idea. So I really appreciate it, and I think I answered my own questions in that way, because I think that it's a model that really allows people to be reached where they're at. And I've always said, and I'll say it again just in case it's helpful to being a school psychologist, that from the mental health kind of perspective in the schools, that what psychologists used to be able to offer all the time, we can't offer as much, not we can't, I can't, they can't, offer as much anymore, was walk into the classroom and there was a problem and you taught people how to think about the problem and you solved it with them. And that is something that I still think is a major thing that kind of died down as paperwork increased. And that's what you guys are doing. So I'm very impressed with it. Okay, now can I ask my second question? Okay. My second question has to do with the special ed. Okay, so what I want to know, so that I know whether or not I have to advocate for two of you, do you coach the special ed teachers, or do you coach the teachers about special ed?
So I'm K-12, so I cover all of the schools, and I both do individual coaching of new teachers in special ed. I have a few interns that I'm working with, too. So I'm working with teachers individually, like you saw on our chart, individual coaching sessions with those teachers. I meet with several of them every single week, so I have about five teachers that are new teachers to our district that I have weekly meetings with. And I'm coaching them a lot around not the IEP, because we have a compliance coordinator that does a lot of the compliance work, but I work with goal and goal writing and planning for instruction in those classes. I've expanded a lot of what I'm doing to working with PLCs and departments Some of our newer PLCs, like Soquel High, has a lot of new teachers in the special ed department. They've been really dynamic and releasing some responsibility for us to really come together as a PLC and do some strong work there. And a lot of that is, all of that we're doing is focused on student data. So we're consistently looking at if students are meeting their IEP goals, what we can change as far as our instruction to meet those goals. Kind of what you're talking about too, that collaboration around student like problem solving, a lot of student connectedness and mental health comes up. And so we're really trying to troubleshoot how we can best meet our student needs. So I do individual PLC, and then I'm also on both district level skill teams for special ed, and coordinate the eight total PD sessions for the year for both elementary and secondary professional development for special education. Did I answer your question?
Well, it does, and how busy you are also. But I do feel that you could use the help of somebody who also did that other half. because the role of helping the teachers understand what special ed and accommodating people adds to the picture is a whole role in itself. And it sounds like you try to sneak it in. But let's see how busy we can get you before you pass out.
I feel like what's been really powerful, because this is my third year, is I'm really starting to see capacity be built among our teachers. So when we're talking about collective teacher efficacy, which you mentioned, we've been doing a lot of work on that in our special ed professional development about rating our collective efficacy. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing a change with some teachers that I've worked with for the first 2 years. Every single week I've released, and I see them taking these leadership roles on at their sites, and that's a really powerful feeling. And so I'm really responding to the need, but I'm seeing the impact on the slide that I was talking about really being able to see capacity built in teachers to implement skills.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. It's great.
Jeremy.
I do have a second question. And I don't need to be flip about it, but ideally, at some point down the line, it strikes me that it would be great if you all worked yourself out of a job, in the sense that...
In the sense that
if, let's say, and we use math as an example, this great team of math teachers got established and meeting once a month, and they were given a stipend of 30 or whatever substitute pay is, $35 an hour, something like that, to meet... And we had those lead teachers in math from first grade all the way to 12th grade talking to each other. Is that the goal, or am I on the right track here? Is that one of the goals to create, your language, not mine, to create that capacity or to create those leaders in each of the content areas so that whether you continue in the future or don't, whether money runs out or not, we have that core group. Is that on the right track there?
Yes.
All right.
No, absolutely.
Mr. Martinez, you've stood up.
Yes, stood up.
Do you want to speak to that, George?
Yeah, I want to speak to that, if I may.
If you may.
George Martinez, Mouser 40 Middle School, 6th grade. Since you brought up mathematics, what we find most challenging in the math programs is the fact that we have sort of a revolving door of people coming in and going out. And so establishing a department where you have consistency, in other words, you have folks that have been there for a number of years, because it takes years to really to develop a strong program, then you're going to find that you will need someone to continually, practically, if that revolving door persist. In other words, you don't have stability in that environment. So the idea being that you need to have a way to provide support to teachers that are new to the district that come in, so they can show them the ropes and how things are working. Ideally, in a department that's stable, that can be done if you have one. But if you have four, say for example, you have a department of say 7 people and 4 of them leave, you really have a big void there. Yeah. And those 3 teachers are left behind, but stay, rather. Not only do they have their full-time job, but then to nurture and to maintain and to support a group of 4. That takes some doing. So how do we develop a district of people coming still for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
That's really the question that you need to answer. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, it's
okay. Cindy's there.
Okay.
And then you.
I really appreciate your being here. I learned a lot from the slides as well as from your report to really think we're on the right track with this, and that the combination of things you showed in that first slide and about where the efficacy is built most strongly with not just the single shot professional development. And, I mean, we're right on track with what you're trying to do. I feel really great about that. I just had a couple of questions. One, you all may know, but I'm new to the boards. I don't happen to know. How are coaches chosen, and how long are you assigned to a position? What's the process there?
Well, you'll see that our coaches have very different roles. We call them all coaches, but some are very different. Again, K-12, elementary, English language learner support. So it depends on it. Now, some coaches have been assigned like a 3-year project, and that, you know, we'll have to see how it that plays out and evaluate. Do we still have the need? Jeremy brought up a really important point as far as, you know, we hope we work ourselves out of a job. We know the importance of coaching the new teachers. We support the New Teacher Center, for example. We support our new teachers and indoctrinate them into our teaching culture. When we have such a massive shift in pedagogy, as the Common Core standards demand, as NGSS demands, as New History Social Studies demands, this is a huge thing. How do we reach our experienced teachers? How do we bring them up? And so we don't want this to be an everlasting thing, but we were in a training today, and the woman had a very great phrase for it. This is a big lift. We have to really get all of our shoulders behind this big lift. It's like, wow, what is Common Core? Because it really is a shift in pedagogy and our instructional practices in order to bring children up to the standards of the Common Core. It's not, ELD has completely changed, and it goes in all of our classes and all of our subject areas. Integrated ELD, at our recent retreat, there was a loud call for coaching to support integrated ELD. What is this integrated ELD? How do I reach the English learners in my classroom, in the biology class, in the art class, in the PE class? Every one of our teachers is a language teacher, and we need to focus on these practices. So I'm not exactly answering, you know, how long. There is not a finite term. As long as we have the need, we need to consider supporting these coaches and finding the way to support them. And I hope that we can work ourselves out of the job. If we do our job, we won't need this support forever. But we have work to be done in this district about the implementation of the instructional practices that are going to let us meet all students. And our in-services team went through a 5-day IMTSS training, and this is very much a part of it. Because they are the team that supports our Tier 1 teachers. Our RTI coordinators are for Tier 2, the kids that are not making it. But what are we doing in the classrooms every day to support 80 to 85% of our learners so that a small fraction of them are needing intervention? So we have, you know, until we have that need, I would say we can't really put a period on it or a timeline on it. So I hope that helps.
That helps. And in terms of the selection, how are the coaches selected?
They apply. They apply.
We're tapped.
The interview process, and we apply, and then we, so they are hired in that way.
Oftentimes people go into coaching because they're seasoned teachers with a huge toolbox full of instructional strategies or diverse needs of diverse populations. So all of us who apply for the jobs feel confident in being able to share those tools from our toolboxes, as well as constantly reading research, going to conferences, going to, like, I go to the MAC Network every month, you know, so meeting teachers from all of Northern California. So that's a major part of what we do and why we are drawn towards this position.
And the second quick question had to do with those areas that we decide to assign a coach, will those change as the strategic focus areas become a little more solidified?
Absolutely. And that was part of our retreat work and our MTSS work. Yeah. Like, we need to focus on that. It's not that everything isn't important, of course, but until we get some traction in one direction and have a unified vision, unified focus for our work, and that is one of the you know, the more aligned we can be in our focus, then the more effective we can be as a coaching team.
Right. Thank you.
Also, thank you.
I would love to speak with an example of that. Mm-hmm. I'm the English learner instructional coach for elementary, and so I was so excited about the 2012 ELD standards and the framework, and I was like, let's go! And the principals in the elementary for the first time said, we're all going to focus on mathematics. We're adopting Eureka. It's a common core-based program, mm-hmm. and our focus altogether, arm in arm, is Eureka Math, and we want to look at it with fidelity. We're going to implement that. Then there was this whole idea of having a professional development that went over, you know, 5 different half days to really help teachers in through the implementation, not a sit and get 2 days before school starts and then off you go. And so here I was ready with language. Well, math isn't numbers. Math is making meaning. Math is using, it's a tool to understand and explore the world and then to explain your understanding and multiple iteration. There's a lot of language. Embedded. I mean, it's language is the skin you're in. And so then I linked arms with Allison last year and this year with Michelle and with our director to look at how do we, they're not isolated.
Right.
How do we work together? Same with science. How is language, how do students make meaning and actively engage in their learning? So that's where we're not as siloed as you would think looking at us. We each have our own bodies. And yet we do, I like to say we're like a honeycomb instead of silos, mm-hmm. where we have our departments or our compartments, but we do inform each other's work with teachers.
That's very helpful, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Larry.
So I have a question about, I was looking at the slide around frequency of teachers that are working with coaches, and I think I heard a comment that you'd like to see greater frequency. So my question is there something that you could identify that there's a need, something that the coaches would like to see? If we got this magical pot of money to support coaches, what would you want to put that money towards?
More.
Yeah, I think
that. More of you?
Yeah,
there
we go. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, but I don't know. Sure, I mean, just, you know, generally, I think that, you know, we, like any system, we're constantly improving, and we have a lot of goals to improve our work and be more focused, be focused in our work. You know, one is to have that aligned instructional focus that we're all working on. Another is communication. By a more improved system, we have better communication, and we'll be able to reach all people better. You know, what is, you know, right now, it's totally, you know, teachers invite the coaches in. And, you know, so if they're working with some teachers, maybe not others. So how do we, as a system, reach more teachers like that? I mean, more time, of course, would be great. But, you know, before we even talk about that, we really need to have, you know, this instructional focus is really going to help us as well. Again, the call was pretty clear from the retreat days that people do value this. And now as the work gets out, can we be more, I don't know what the word is, maybe widespread or more, how do we extend our reach? And I think that, you know, one thing is
Marianne,
that...
Marianne, can you speak to how Live Oak is doing their coaching?
A great point. We are looking at other districts. We're looking at districts that are having different outcomes than ours. Live Oak, for example, has a full-time coach per site. And they do instructional... Every teacher is involved in a cycle of coaching. So they do 8-week cycles of coaching with grade spans. And they do those throughout. They do 3 of those cycles throughout the year. At the end of the year, then those coaches actually been working individually with students at the very end of the year. But it is very systematic, where all teachers are being affected by the coach or being supported by the coach. Mm-hmm. And again, it's really important to understand that this is peer coaching. This is not evaluative. This really depends on relationship and the relationship that our coaches have developed with our sites is pretty remarkable, especially considering that some are going to 10, 11 different sites every day. So, I mean, you're not every day, but again, in a week. That is a little crazy, and we have super, super people in the roles. So, I mean, I think I would like to see us be able to have a systematic way to reach all teachers. I'd like to see us have, you know, less travel and more focus on several sides of the house or one side, ideally, to build that relationship, that trust, be part of the staff. I know where to find her, you know, it's not Tuesday, I'm not going to see you again until next Tuesday.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Spread very thin.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Sheila.
Actually, pretty simple question, but I just want to make sure before I go around talking about this that I'm right. It looks like it's 50%, over 50% contact with individual teachers. Does that mean one-on-one contact with individual teachers?
Yeah, and or administrators. So. Yeah, that's not that.
Well, the administrators is only 11%. So it's 54.8 for individual teachers. That's pretty amazing. So you're going into specific classrooms, and do you find that those teachers then share with other teachers? Do you find that you're getting a reverberating effect?
I personally find that just like students, all our teachers have individualized needs, and so I feel like we're really responding to those needs. So sometimes some of us will collaboratively coach an individual teacher, and so I'll meet with a teacher, and a lot of content questions will come up that I go, well, you know, I'm going to go to my English learner person and make sure that they can help me collaboratively coach. So it is a lot of contact, but I feel like being very responsive to those needs has helped build capacity, because then that teacher has dual understanding of more content going out. And like I was saying earlier, I'm finding over time, and I think that that's another thing to recognize is we're young in this program, in this model. And I think we're starting to see, those of us who have been in the position for 3 years, a lot of the work that we've done with teachers really growing. So I feel like right this year we're kind of at the precipice of seeing that real impact. Like, I really appreciate what Jeremy was saying about bringing teachers, and I think we all got really excited about that, because we're really seeing our impact over time with teachers that we may have been working with for 2.5 years plus. And so I do feel like they're bringing a lot of that back to their PLCs and departments. We're doing a lot of professional development with them that they're bringing back to their sites, and even in their more smaller groups where they're doing elementary PD, they're having a lot of collaboration time together. So, yeah, it is a lot of individual contact. That feels kind of crazy-making when you're K-12 sometimes, because you're going all over the place. But I feel like over time, that's what we really want to get more into with our group, so we can expand that collaboration and growth.
Great. Thank you.
You had something else?
Okay. Yeah, people, you know, say, oh, you're on the school board, you got a $70 million budget. But we don't. $60 million plus is salaries, benefits. We only have, and I'll exaggerate, $9, $10 million of discretionary funds. So I would say publicly, you guys represent about 10% of our discretionary funds. And that being said, I would propose that we have a minimum of sometime in the near or far future, a one-hour study session to address some of the issues raised. For example, one of the things we've done is school board members and principals and district office personnel, we've set up stations. And this station is ELD, and this station is science, and this station is math. We could combine, and I think we could set up 5 or 6 stations, and we'd have 10, 15 minutes at each station to sort of see. That's one idea. And that might also be a place where teachers who have been helped by your coaching could come and talk to us. But again, I would say it's probably more than 10%. I'd say it's more like 15% of our discretionary funds is being placed in this. This is the third year. It seems to me it's in our interest and the public's interest to really dig into this a little bit, and for I'm familiar with some of what you're doing. For example, I was there for the math, the elementary, and of course through Heather, I've seen science. But I think all of us would benefit from that, or that's my proposal. And I know we have a very full.
It's definitely something to consider, because we do have.
I don't know how else to make it other than as a. My formal request, I don't know what other school board members think about that, but I think an hour or 2 hours of our time would be very well spent learning more about this.
So we bring that to our governance study session to talk about as we plan our governance sessions.
Can I officially say that I'd like that on the agenda, and then we can talk it up or down? Great. Okay.
Okay. Thank you all so much for joining us tonight. We all learned a lot.
Thank you very much.
You know, they've provided a beautiful segue into our next report. So before Pat introduces our next speaker, I want to talk a little bit about, I'm sorry, I should let you. George came up and talked about we need to keep teachers here. Mm-hmm. We need to bring teachers in. We need to keep them here. And one of the challenges that we've been looking at is it's hard for teachers to get established in this community because of the cost of living and the cost of housing. And we were able to bring in the landed fund resources to help teachers with down payments. But you got to have some time to save a down payment, and the rent in this town is pretty tough to save on when you're on a teacher's salary, especially when you're a new teacher. So I'm going to hand it to Pat to introduce our next presenter this evening. But I think there's a nice correlation between teacher recruitment and retention and our coaching efforts.
So we have Lee Demon here with us tonight from DCG, and in November, you approved feasibility work we've done. We've shared with you the summary report that Lee and her team, along with Dominic, put together for you, evaluating multiple sites as potential options for us. And so tonight, as opposed to an action item, you've already seen action on the feasibility study. We wanted to check in with you, share the information that Lee and her team put together for us. And as opposed to us doing in-depth feasibility reports on multiple sites, based on the feedback they're providing to you tonight, we'd like to carve out some of that money and do a more in-depth analysis on the site that they're recommending. And just, you know, process-wise, the next steps will be that we'll come back to you. We've had some preliminary discussions with our financial advisor, Mark Farrell, who will be part of this overall discussion, so we'll bring back to you as part of this feasibility report a whole financial discussion. And we've also spoken with an architect, too, who's done some of this work in other cities. So the next steps are for Lee and her team to do a more in-depth study. They'll partner with the financial people. They'll partner with architects to bring back to you the next part of the in-depth report, which is a summary of that type of information. So you understand the financial pieces. You understand some options in terms of what these structures might look like, the timing of that as well. And then we would move forward to the next step, which is actually securing the financing, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? So that's kind of the big picture rollout process-wise, where Lee fits into this. Lee actually walked the sites with her colleague, and she shared with you that summary and that one-page summary, and she'll walk us through the slides. So Lee, thanks for being here.
Thanks. So Superintendent gave a great transition between these two, because one of the issues with workforce housing, but yeah, it takes some time to actually construct, but in that time, you're recruiting new educators, training them, and then they're leaving. Or they're trying to save up, and then they just are like, I can't do this anymore, because the average house in Santa Cruz is over $800,000, and the average one-bedroom rent is over $2,000. So even if you're like, oh, I'll just rent for a while and try to save up, that's not necessarily feasible. So what a lot of districts in California and actually across the country are doing is districts are starting to think, can we repurpose some of our underutilized property to see if we can build on a portion of it, build some rental housing? And one thing to note is, typically, this is for teachers and other educators. So this is also classified employees, everyone like that. So one thing to note is, as you mentioned, we looked at three sites that the district provided. Two of them really didn't work, so we didn't really want to overburden your resources by having in-depth studies on two sites that really were not going to be particularly functional. So I'll go through these relatively quickly, but if you have questions, happy to go through in more detail. So the first site is La Fonda, next to the adult school. So it's actually the portion that's slightly lower than the adult school for people who, presumably most people have been out there. This has quite a number of mature trees on it. It also backs onto single-family homes, and a lot of the students from the high school actually cut through this area. So if you were to build on it, you have to take down mature trees, there's a slope on it. You'd really be interfering with some of the students as they're walking from the high school, so it's really not an ideal site. You could, as the years go on, if you built somewhere else, you could look at this as part of a phase two. You know, maybe if you're redoing part of the adult school, you might be able to reorganize. So not an ideal situation, but maybe in the future you could consider it. Alternatively, there's also basically behind it where the district office is at Sacal. Behind Sacal High School, there's a portion of the property that's actually owned by the county. So you have a large, there is a large property there. It's not actually owned by the district, which is one of the issues. It's also open space, so you'd kind of be taking property away from the public domain, which gets quite complicated. There's also some access issues because you'd have to build a road sort of up behind and try to connect utilities, so it could get quite expensive. And even if you were to build sort of on the, no, well, I'll do it in Swiss people. Down here on the other portion, again, it's quite sloped. And the reason we're sort of skipping this, and I'm talking a little fast, is because you have quite a good option here behind Natural Bridges High School on Swift Street. So if you look, so this is Delaware, this is Swift. You have about 2.5 acres. It's flat. There's only portables on this back section in addition to sort of a small community garden. It's next to where you used to have the corporation yard. You basically don't have neighbors. So when you're talking about sites that are good for development, this is sort of an ideal situation. Flat, enough acreage to actually get enough density to make the money worth it. No one who's probably going to be that vocal complains, because one of the things is you want to be sensitive to the neighbors. You're not going to put a 6-story building next to 1-story single-family homes. So what you have is the city's parks, this is their tennis courts, you have you, and then you have some warehouses over here in the single-family neighborhood over here. Right here, you actually have approved development for 2 4-story apartment buildings. So there's actually some dense housing, so the cities tend to be much more in favor of putting like properties next to like properties. So this would, because you have a flat property too, it's helpful for, you know, costs. You don't have to take down trees, really. So it helps bring down all these costs. So when we did this one, we really wanted to focus on this property too, because you also already have access off of Swift Street. One of the nice things about a site like this too is when you're building workforce housing, one of the things that's unique about something like this is your employees actually have the opportunity to walk or bike or carpool to work. So unlike most housing projects, this actually tends to decrease traffic, which is a pretty rare situation. You know, your teachers could be walking right just next door to the schools here, or you could have your coaches and possible employees just biking or doing anything like that. The property actually could get high enough up, you could actually have ocean views, so you could have a situation pretty unique where you could have, I'm sure, people lining up to have an opportunity to, you know, just go next door, play tennis, have ocean views, walk to work, and save up money for a down payment for a house, you know, partner with Landed or something like that. And you're actually utilizing a portion of the property the district isn't particularly utilizing in depth. You would, you know, relocate some of these the uses you have up here. You just sort of move them a little closer to the school. So, you know, it's a way to reutilize your property in a way that actually benefits your employees. So you're not getting rid of it. You continue to own the property. You would not be selling it. You would just build a property, the physical building, on top of it. So, you know, of your options, that's why we sort of skipped the first two. And building at Swift Street, it's its own parcel. It's what this green line is. The red line is just denoting the area that we're suggesting, you know, more or less, that we would recommend you build on. There's probably a little bit of environmental cleanup, probably because just because you guys have that courtyard there. But all in all, 2.5 acres is a good option. So as Pat mentioned, the next step would be, instead of in-depth studying all three, you know, with site plans and things like that, just to focus here and really look at in how many units could you really get, about what that would cost, you know, what would rent rates probably be if you built it like that, things of that nature. So this, again, would be probably where you would build. The ocean's out this way. So that is Swift Street. And then just as a sort of brief summary for people who are in the audience who are newer to the issue or for any of the trustees that have questions, some general parameters is about workforce housing. It's typically as transitional, as mentioned earlier. The idea is that employees are living in it for 3 to 7 years, depending on how the district chooses to set it up. And so in that time, instead of spending $2,000 a month, or somewhere about there, on housing, you know, they're spending maybe about 70% of the market rate. And that portion that they're not spending, they're maybe saving and putting it into some sort of savings program so that they can eventually buy a home in the community. So they remain permanent residents of your community. So while you're, you know, having all these training programs, investing in them, they actually are investing in your actual community. So again, the rent's typically about 70%. If you do not use what are typical affordable housing funds to pay for it, you as the district can set the rents as you need them to be. So So that's the benefit. If you take affordable housing funds, there's income restrictions that will restrict your rent rates. So beyond that, you will have a lot of flexibility if you choose to move forward with this. One thing a lot of districts get concerned on is they say, I'm not in the housing business. That's true. You shouldn't be in the housing business. You're not a landlord. So you would actually hire a third party to manage these units. So you don't need to be concerned that somebody's going to be here saying, you know, my window is leaking or I want you to paint it or whatever. That's not going to be the case. But there's somebody else who would be collecting rents, managing applications, things like that. Housing is very high, so building housing is very high. There's a lot of variance in this, depending on when you choose to build, building materials. So that's why I mentioned the next meeting we go in depth about basically what this would cost. But somewhere between $400,000 to $500,000 is sort of the range per unit. There's different types of funding sources, certificates of participation. For those in the audience who might not be aware, certificates of participation, in this case, it's basically a loan that's backed by the rents that would be received from the units. It's a low-interest loan, essentially, at about 3.84% right now is the interest rate. It's also affordable housing funds. So you might have classified employees who would still count as low income or even moderate incomes. Teachers might still qualify, because that's been one of the issues, is that teachers make too much to qualify for low-income housing. Again, you might have classified, so it still might meet some of those. So regardless, it'll be important to work with the city or the county of Santa Cruz moving forward. One general statement, though, obviously your goal is to recruit and retain. The most important thing, though, moving forward is that at no point do you put the general fund at risk. You know, our goal in this, as we know all of your staff is you never do anything that makes any of, you know, anything to do with the district at the risk at any stage in this. You know, whether it's, you know, from a reputation standpoint or from the financial standpoint, that this continues to be a good decision throughout the process. This is going to, if you choose to move forward, this is, you know, a strong financial investment, both, you know, just from the cost of construction, but it is a good investment in terms of your faculty and staff. And it is an actual asset, which is nice. It's not just, you know, spending a bunch of money and then walking away from it. But the whole goal is, throughout the process, is to minimize the actual risk. So just in terms of what next steps would be, or sort of the summary again, is that at Swift Street, probably the opportunity to build somewhere in the ballpark of 75 units. That number would be refined again as we would go through site planning, but just sort of a general statement. At the next meeting, we'll go through the financing a bit more, what your options would be, what costs would be, and then from there, you'll be able to make a stronger decision about what you actually want to do, because at this stage, we're not looking for an action item. We're just presenting the results of that memo. And then throughout the process, as we move forward, you know, there'd be a pretty extensive engagement process, both with all your bargaining units, with the neighbors who live nearby, with the city, with the county, and everyone like that. So it's a long process, but it's certainly worthwhile. Other districts have gone through this and have quite positive results. I'm happy to talk more about various case studies and some of the results of all of those, but you're very lucky in that a lot of districts don't have an opportunity at all to use any property, so you have quite a good opportunity there at Swift Street if you can choose to move forward. So I went a little fast, but I know you have a packed agenda, so I'll pause there.
So I want to add to that, one of my recommendations would be that we convene a neighborhood advisory group right away. We have some engaged neighbors who've been involved in Mayor Terrazas, who lives right in the neighborhood, is willing to help us with that. If we're interested, and you give me direction to move in that direction right now.
Okay, Sheila, you have a question?
Okay, I have several questions, but I'm only doing one at a time. So my first one goes back to the map. I was down there looking at that the area, and you're right, it's just good flat area, and it's got the driveway coming in. I couldn't figure out by that map, is it going, it's including the older warehouse area, or it's not including the old warehouse area?
Right here, this building right here?
No, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
It is. Okay. And where are the other, you said there was already a development or plan for a development of four story?
There's an approved development. See these two buildings right here? I should split.
Uh-huh.
There's an, the picture cuts off a little bit. There's actually larger lot back here. there's approved development, so they're selling it right now. So if you Google the address, they're selling right now the plans for the apartment buildings right here.
Okay.
So if somebody is probably, assumingly, going to purchase, they have right to build 2 4-story apartment buildings behind right here. The front of it is a live, is a workspace, so they're building as a live work community. So in some ways, not dissimilar to what a workforce housing project really is.
Yeah.
Where people are working here and living here. They're doing the working here and living here. So actually, construction would happen first year, and then in theory, if you build, probably maybe a year later, you'd be building.
Yeah.
But so the city of Santa Cruz has approved building back here.
Okay.
So a little further north.
I'm leaving it on
your side.
Yeah. Is that you, Patty?
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. It is.
Yes. I'm hoping that you can speak to projects that you have done that have had good outcomes, and then perhaps a project that has been the most challenging and why.
Well, one project that I did not do, but I can tell you why it was problematic, that's a workforce housing one, is why I don't feel bad maybe saying that it was problematic, is LA Unified School District built a teacher... tried to build a teacher housing project, and the reason I'm using the word teacher housing is because they were very unsuccessful as that as a goal, because they built a very dense project in Los Angeles and used affordable housing funds. They actually used low-income tax credits to do so without necessarily thinking through the implications of having income restrictions, and then ended up not being able to have any teachers live in it because of the income restrictions, and only classified employees were able to live there. That was a major issue that they've had. It is successful in the sense that they have had classified employees live there, but they have gotten a huge backlash from their community, which is going to be problematic next time they go for a bond, because the community is going to say, you have not been good stewards of our resources, so why would I support you? Which is just a general statement I'm going to make, again, when it comes to like minimizing risk, is that's the point of the, you guys are obviously being good stewards of your resources because you're going through a long process. One project that we're working with is actually in the city of Mountain View. So we think obviously housing costs are high here. Mountain View is even more so. They are doing something quite similar in that they looked at multiple sites and then are likely, they're in a relatively similar process that you guys are in. They're a little further along. They looked at seven or eight sites and now are finalizing, going to build on just on one site. They have a larger site, so they're probably going to, they might end up selling a portion of it to fund construction. So there's multiple ways, again, that you can choose to move forward with housing. They are going to do a similar size development, about 80 units. But they also have a situation where they have a, not a mayor, but they have a trustee who lives in the neighborhood next to it. So we are also going to do community meetings because they have a very active community who's not pro-development, to put it nicely. So it's very important that they have, you know, very strong interaction with all of the neighbors, particularly because there's a public park that's next to it. So it's important that, you know, we have assets that are helpful for the whole community, not just, you know, one segment, because that's also a question that sometimes comes up, is why are you, you know, housing is a huge issue for affordability in the whole community, so why are you only helping one subset? And so this is a good example where, firstly, just because that's an issue doesn't mean you do nothing. That's one thing to note. And then if the costs equal themselves out, eventually one of the nice things about having a leasable property, those rent revenues should in the future you pay down your debt. Your debt equals zero. Rent, obviously, lease revenue is unrestricted income. So you can support your general fund by having an unrestricted revenue source. Again, that's only once you've paid down all debt. So you can become more financially independent out of the school district. So even though not every employee necessarily might directly benefit, also the cost of a district now potentially needing to rehire, that's also one less cost. Mm-hmm. So that's something, that's a response that we've been dealing with in the city of Mountain View that's still applicable here. So those are two case studies in my field.
Leah, can you share a little bit about the Pittsburgh project?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that was a very good point. So Pittsburgh Unified School District, so for those who might
East
not
Bay?
Be... Yes, so in Contra Costa County, so Pittsburgh is might not strike people as the most expensive place in the Bay Area. It's near Hercules, Richmond area, for those of you who are aware. Pittsburgh Unified is actually going to use a site that's quite similar. It used to be a school site. It's about 2.5 acres next to a train track. They are going to build about 80 units. of a five-story building, and they do not have a huge affordability issue, and their school district is choosing to build, again, about 80 units, all using probably bond financing in order to pay for it, in part because they are very aware of the recruitment and retention issue, even if at the moment they're not dealing with a massive departure of staff, but they know just as, you know, every three teachers that are leaving, they're only having one that are going to come back in the state of California. Mm-hmm. So they're basically future planning for that and recognizing that even if, you know, they don't end up doing bond financing, that that rent revenue will be a source of, you know, independent financing if the state someday starts to cut budgets. So they'll have an asset that right now has just been sitting there. They've done nothing with it, basically. It's not an active school site. So they'll be able to have 80 units, and if in the future they decide, you know, they can't use all of them or something like that, they can always sell the whole asset or try to do something else to, you know, have city employees there or something like that. So they're actually, we're actually entitling the project right now. So the architect on that is an architect you guys use for your school sites, Maddy Architects. So we are already in the entitlement process for that. But yeah, they are, you know, can do about 80 units. It's also next to a public transit site. So one of the ideas is spouses of employees will also help reduce traffic because right now those people are also still living even further out from Pittsburgh, commuting into San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a traffic reduction measure, and it's also helping a site that was pretty not a...
attractive.
Yes.
There we go.
So they're revitalizing what's sort of an entry to their community. Mm-hmm. So the city is very excited because they're going to turn from a blighted asset into a nice, beautiful, five-story building. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And next, I'm happy to show some images of what that's going to look like.
Student?
Yeah, this isn't necessarily a question, I think, for the, about the presentation, but there's a lot of focus on building this housing, and it doesn't seem like a permanent fix to, like, a increasing problem in the city, and that housing is going to continue to increase in pricing, so I would just be curious to know at some point, or just to see at some point, how the board is going to be supporting organizing and activism more with, like, the city and city council for legislation around affordable housing, because I assume that this is for teachers to live here and then move on, but they can't move on if housing is still really expensive.
So we have, I sit on a city housing committee with Pat and Trevor, and we are working with other major employers in the city to look at how do we make sure that there are is housing available for the workforce and the service industry and the government service industry of our community. That's something we participate in. We meet every couple months. We also have a group of trustees who meet with representatives from city council four times a year to talk about issues, and housing is always a part of that conversation. And so those are ways that we're working on this. We just see this, we don't see this as the full solution, but we see it as part. It's one of those things that will help us with making us also more competitive in being able to recruit for the teachers who are in our region, to make it attractive to come and to work and live here in Santa Cruz. Go ahead.
So the other thing I was going to say, Daniela, is that Frank Healy, there's an initiative underway to replicate an initiative that was done in Santa Clara County to address the countywide housing, affordable housing issue. So there's discussions about an initiative being on the ballot at some point to help fund the larger scale challenge that the county has. Okay.
Yeah. One other thing that is a connection between the two is that when districts build housing on their own property, it helps, especially below market rate housing, it helps pull some supply that your employees were using in the community. So instead of them renting a home in that community, that space has now opened up because now they're renting on district property, so in theory a spot has opened up somewhere else in that area. So that can help with the sort of overall affordability issue because now there's a little bit more supply without some other builder needing to build somewhere else in the county.
Okay.
Any
So again, just checking in with you. Thanks to Lee for her hard work.
Thank you.
If folks are, I'm sorry, so your light is tucked behind us. Sorry.
You
can
brush me out.
Never.
I actually have a couple questions. So if nobody else does, I'll run through them fast. One of them is I got confused about you and what you said about the affordable housing, because in one place you said, because we don't use affordable housing money, the district can set the rates. And in another place, you said that that was one of the things we were going to do. So I was trying to understand, does that mean you have different rates for different parts of it, or what?
Yeah, there's different ways you can do it. There's also different, it depends on the types of funding you take. So there's funding that comes from, like, the city of Santa Cruz or the county of Santa Cruz. When they, typically when a builder chooses to build market rate housing, they can either do an in-lieu fund, so they're building market rate units, and then they can provide funds into, like, the city affordable housing, so then you can work with the city, so you can basically pull some of that money out, sort of simplistically. And then there's low-income tax credits that are from the state and the federal government, and those are things that have income restrictions. In-lieu funds from the city or the county can also have income restrictions, but you might still have employees who meet those, so depending on how the district chooses to set up your rents, you can sometimes tier it. It's also based on the average rent in that complex, so it's not per person. So it's kind of easier, maybe I show the chart next time, but like if you have two different people, employees, you might have, like if you use 20% of your financing comes from these combination of affordable housing funds, so maybe in this case it's a little simpler if you don't take government funding, to be honest, but let's say you took low-income fund, like in lieu fees from the city or county, and 20% of your funding came from them, but 80% of your funding came from, like, certificates of participation or something like that, the average rent is what gets impacted by that 20%. So it's not that 20% of your employees need to fit that group. It's that the rents that are being impacted just seem to, like, come down into that grouping. And, again, you might have 50% of the residents might be classified employees. I'm just using it as a ballpark, a number. I'm not saying that's what you'll do. So it might end up working out. That's sort of when we go through the finance, you start to kind of play around with also moderate housing requirements, sometimes still fit for teachers, so that city and county still might have funding available for moderate income, which you might still qualify for as your sort of recommended target groups. So there's sort of extremely low, moderate, and so somewhere from extremely low and moderate is probably the target groups you're trying to hit. It's when you get the tax credits that you start, which is what happened at LA Unified, it starts to get a little complex. So
okay.
Affordable housing funding, but
thank you. The other question that I thought you might have the answer to, since you've seen this everywhere else, there was a happening in this city where a decision was made to have some housing, have a third-party oversight. There was a lot of problems with the third-party oversight because nobody was overseeing the oversight because the city was trying to stay out of it. And so I'm wondering how you handle that.
Yeah, so one way that this gets done, well, firstly, it would probably be that discipline, unless you have a bond and you have, like, a bond oversight committee. If you don't have a bond oversight committee, then things get problematic because maybe then there's no oversight. So as much oversight as you deem necessary is probably a good idea. But San Mateo Community College, which arguably has had the most successful projects, which happened, we weren't involved in them. They've had two that happened in 2002, 2010, and they're working on a third. So the woman in charge of those projects is now actually affiliated with my firm, so she'll probably come next time so you can ask questions. But they have a third-party management company, but they have an advisory board that's made up of a faculty member, a real estate attorney. It's like a 7-member board, so they have like an intermediary group that's between the property management company and the university. So that's something what we recommend.
Okay.
So it's basically the space between the two.
That
and
makes me feel better.
That's what you would have.
Yeah.
You know, bond oversight committee or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And the last thing I wanted to say is that my thought is that the minute we have a neighborhood advisory committee, I mean the minute we have it, the entire community is going to know about this. So are we doing something to meet with or inform the community at large once that happens? Because otherwise the rumors are going to spread.
Well,
It's public now that we're looking at this, and if you give us direction tonight to continue, I think I'm going to start initially with a small group to and ask them to give us the things they think we should be considering from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still in the investigation stage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think when we get to a place where we decide that we're going to go into an entitlement stage where we're doing this and we are making commitments to bigger next steps, then we probably want to do more. I spoke to my colleagues in the county superintendents, and I'm going to be drafting an op-ed on teacher recruitment and teacher recruitment and retention and workforce housing needs, because four of the districts in the county are going through feasibility studies right now. And so I agreed to take on the task of drafting something that I'm going to vet with all of them. And the Sentinel has agreed to publish it.
Great.
And I was going to do it this last weekend, and I didn't get it done.
Yeah.
So my goal is in the next week or two to have that out to my colleagues for feedback and then to the Sentinel.
Yeah.
So that's one way to communicate what we're trying to do.
And I guess I was also thinking not of having like a whole lot of meetings, but maybe having something on the website that people could turn to and get like the basic information, even when it's just basic, because it would stop the rumors from happening.
So we could put something on the website. We could put a page about workforce. We could put a link to workforce housing,
uh-huh.
and kind of the
sure.
preliminary feasibility review and our next steps. We could
yeah.
put something up about that.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I think tonight we're talking about going forward and getting more information about the preferred site, the natural bridges site, and so we're in agreement with that.
Yeah. Yes.
And then the other thing is forming the neighborhood group. Are we giving direction to superintendent to go ahead with that?
Do we do that as a...
I'm just looking for nods. I don't think we need a motion.
It's not a motion. It's just kind of nods.
Nods, yeah.
Nod one, nod two.
Yeah. So... Patty?
I would ask in the reach for the neighborhood group that you be open to allowing anybody who wants to be, as opposed to asking who you'd like to be on the group. Sometimes I think that that's part of the communication that people say, hey, I would have loved to be part of this. So to be as open as possible, I know how difficult it is for people to have more meetings and such, but moving forward, I think it will pay dividends to have those that we've never really known. In what some deem the inner circles of always being on the same committees. We've had committees in this city that have been forever the same name. So I'm just putting that out there in hopes to hear it. No need for any...
Well, I'm going to be forming this. So I'd like to propose that the initial group is smaller.
Mm-hmm.
A smaller representative group. But we would do bigger community meetings mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. As we move forward and we decide that we're going to move into entitlement, what I'd like to do is get some representatives from the neighborhood who can talk to us about things they want to make sure we consider. One of the people I want to ask is one of the people that emails me regularly from the neighborhood about the site, and she's someone who helped me get information out on Nextdoor about our meeting next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, she's not an elected official or anything that I'm asking, but just someone that's been actively engaged in the neighborhood and a voice of the neighborhood.
I'm all for that. I'm happy to hear that. You know, I know that there is always a sidebar running with the next door forums that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can have a couple representatives from that, I think it will be the voice that not only helps us to be informed, but also helps to inform the community, because a lot of people don't want to come to a meeting, and so they will... If they get quality secondhand information or information from somebody within their own circle, it is much more palatable when we're trying to move ahead in the sticky areas. Thank you for that consideration.
Okay, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was nice.
Well
yeah.
done. Thank you.
All right, so we're opening the public hearing to approve AB 1200?
No, we're on Belly.
Belly.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to move through really fast, aren't I? I'm sorry. Right. Okay. Bond measure.
So great. Tonight we have David Pearcey from Belli Architecture. This month, February, we're going to have David share some information on the project that he's working on. In March, you're going to hear from Baros Architecture on the projects they're working on. And in April, you're going to hear from Maddie Architects on the projects they're working on. So the next 3 months, you're going to hear about all the projects, all the sites, and where we're at. So David's going to focus in on a couple of his projects tonight with you. And initially, for tonight's meeting, we thought we'd be bringing forward to you the next couple of documents that accompany the lease-leaseback process. There was a lease-leaseback agreement that we brought forward to you for XL Construction to be selected for the pool projects and for the Harbor Field project. And so we thought we'd bring it forward tonight, but we're actually going to bring to you, we plan to bring to you next board meeting, the multiple lease-leaseback documents for the field project. And then on the 28th, we'll bring back to you the multiple lease-leaseback documents for the pool project. Or projects, and that's what someone David's going to talk about tonight. So I shared with you in an email that I was able to join David and some of his colleagues at DSA on Friday. And this is probably my fifth or sixth time up to DSA, Division of State Architect, to talk about the projects that we're working on. And our discussion centered around liquefaction and lateral spreading.
Yeah.
Not good.
Sounds like
that.
Okay. So those folks are not liquefaction. It has to do with kind of, in layman's terms, it's the water content that's in the soil and the stability of the soil. And when you're doing a construction project, what does that present to you in the form of a challenge? And we heard from the person in DSA that that in his 30 years, he hadn't quite seen a report with that level of liquefaction and lateral spreading in it.
Special.
So, there's a ripple effect to that, and that's something David's going to talk about, and that's what I tried to catch for you in my email to you the other night. And when we look at the pool, there's a discussion about the pool, and there's a discussion about lights on the field, because that soil is going through where the field project is. It also goes right through, and David will probably show you on the diagram directly where the soil is going, where the pool is currently. Good news is, in a short period of time, we're going to have, you know, a lot of projects underway. Dirt flying and hammers going and backhoes and all kinds of stuff. So that's the exciting part. But it's a process to get there, right? So XL received bids for the field. And in addition to the message I sent the other day about some of those challenges, we talked to you for some time about the escalating cost of construction. We're seeing that. Now it's real. Now we're seeing it, and it's something we're going to have to manage. And so one of the slides David's going to share with you tonight is the budget that's from the facility master plan, and we're going to talk a little about what those estimates are coming in at, because we've talked for some time about, as a board, as a team, we're going to have a discussion about if costs for projects come in excess of what the TEDR estimates were, then there's a decision we have to make. And in Harvard, when you look through that list of projects, there's not a lot of projects on there. And we have costs coming in out estimates for the field, and we have costs coming in for pools, and they're higher than what the TEDR estimates were. So it's going to be a conversation we have about when we move forward on those, that what do we draw those funds from out of the overall budget? Okay? So Dave will talk a little about that. And in the lease-leaseback documents we bring to you, next week for the field. I'm glad we're having this conversation tonight because next week it'll be a decision. And we're going to kind of give you an option A and an option B. The great thing about a lease-leaseback arrangement is you have the ability to have this conversation with the contractor, and you get to do pre-construction services, which we deal with them. After we sign the initial lease, we do pre-construction. And we had a conversation with them about value engineering. So when some of these cost estimates were coming in anticipated, we had a conversation with the contractor who says, we need to reduce some of that scope so we can have a monetary conversation. It may be that we end up doing all the things that were in the list in the project, but there's also an option to potentially reduce some of that scope as we have a discussion about the larger budget. Okay? So David's going to walk through some of that later tonight, too. So next week's going to be kind of a decision for you. Glad we had a little time. We have tonight's presentation. We'll bring back to next week the lease-lease-back documents. But I'm glad we have tonight to put these numbers in context for you to the overall budget. And it's time for you to think about it before next week. We say either do it all or scale it back so we can use some of those funds in other areas, like classrooms. Okay? So that's me kind of setting the big stage for you before David talks about going into a little more detail. And so with that, I'll kind of turn over to David.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. Good evening. It's my pleasure to be before you this evening. So I had as Pat alluded to, when I submitted my presentation a couple weeks ago, we hadn't understood a couple of these things. So a couple of the things that have come up are basically late breaking. So I have altered the presentation slightly from what is in your board packs to what you've seen on your screen. It's all the same slides, but I reorganized them a little bit. And forgive me, I've sort of had to rearrange my presentation a little bit to touch on some of these specific issues. And there's a lot of details involved. I'll try to be as succinct and clear as possible, but please, if there's any questions, I welcome those as well. So just a real quick overview. My name again is David Peartree. I'm an architect with Bell Architectural Group. And Bell Architectural Group is handling all the design work for you at Harbor High School and at Bryan Supporting Middle School. There's one exception to that. We are also doing the competition pool replacement at Soquel High School. Maddie Group is doing the rest of your projects at Soquel and Bartos, as well as some other campuses, and Bartos Architects, as Pat mentioned, are doing some other projects, and they're going to be before you shortly with their updates. But I'll be obviously focused on Harbor and Bryan Supporting and the Soquel pool. Starting off here, this slide is a representation of sort of where we have ended up with the Harbor High School track and field. Back last fall, we were envisioning sort of the entire project. And as part of that project, we had considered some work in this area as well as some work connecting the upper campus to the lower campus, as well as some required fire department access. Back last fall, when we were looking at the project, we decided that we needed to skinny up the scope a little bit. And so it's a little hard, I think it's a little bit better on this monitor here, but the outline in red indicates the scope that XL Construction did, which includes track and field, obviously, which is a synthetic turf field and then synthetic track surface, as well as a new concessions and restroom building in that location there. And as we talked, and we'll talk a little bit more about stadium lighting in these four locations here, as well as a new disabled access, accessible path of travel from the gym and locker room areas onto the area of work, as well as the requisite fire department access to the new area. As Pat mentioned earlier this month, we secured DSA approval, and XL Construction received the bids. Upon the receipt of the bids, we became concerned about cost escalation, as the total bids were in the range of $8 million for the project as you see it, basically outlined in red as I've described. We attribute that to unprecedented escalation in the market for both projects I'm working on in this district as well as other projects in other districts I'm working on. We're seeing unprecedented amounts of inflation involved with construction costs, unfortunately. Also, some of the things that, when master planning is done, they're looking at projects from a 30,000-foot level, so to speak. So when we get into this, as we alluded to, we've got some interesting soil conditions that were discovered as we developed the design of the project. So in addition to some complications with the stadium lighting, the entire track surface needs to be what we call lime treated. And that's not uncommon, but it's a practice that is needed, and that involves basically mixing lime into the soil for a certain depth to basically dry out the soil and solidify the soil. What else? Let's see. So soils conditions. Also floodplain. We've been talking a little bit about floodplain. The Arana Gulch in this whole area here was originally part of a floodplain. Mm-hmm. And when they built the school, they basically chopped the top of the upper campus off to make a flat part to build the school, and they pushed all the soil down the hill, and what used to be a natural floodplain became your track and field and the pool and everything else. So, so what that means is that we've had to do some additional grading along the southern edge, along the boundary with Arana Gulch, to prevent your brand new track and field from getting inundated with floodwaters, which it actually tends to do from time to time. Mm-hmm. As well as our location for our concessions and restroom building had to be tucked up sort of on that slope in order to keep it out of floodwaters. And so there's costs associated with grading and with doing that work to get it out of the floodplain. So that's just a kind of quick few examples of sort of some of the reasons I think we've ended up where we've ended up with cost. So what we did, and again, this kind of just happened in the last week and a half or so, is we got on the phone with XL Construction, met with Trevor, with Pat, in your facilities department, and started to think about providing the board with an option. If we decided to continue to reduce some of the scope of this project, what would that look like? And so I'll run through this real quick. So removing restroom and concession building. So if we were to remove this piece of work, what would that look like? So we took a look at what it would take if we were to pull that piece out. We also had some money in for some landscaping and irrigation along the northern edge as part of sort of a beautification effort. We thought that it's possible that maybe this could be phased later, or the district's own forces could do some of that work, some replanting of things like that. We've been talking to our engineers about reducing the amount of lime tree within a sort of an area that we're all comfortable with to reduce some of the cost. We've also looked at reducing some of the retaining walls. That was suggested by the contractor. We might get creative with some of the grading and be able to reduce some of the cost of our retaining walls. All of those things together, we're still working on the numbers, but all those things together we're thinking is about $1 million worth of savings for the project. So I think that covers kind of where we're at with that. I think I wanted to mention, though, if you don't mind, just I think it's important for the board to consider that when we start to pull big pieces of the project out, there are complications down the line. So those complications are somewhat obvious in the sense that escalation and inflation continues to happen. So what costs a certain amount of money now is almost certainly going to cost more money down the road. We also end up with challenges. If you can imagine, we've built your brand new track and field, and then in a couple of years we decide in the next bond that we want to go ahead and finish out the concessions building. It's totally doable, but we then have more considerations. It gets a little bit more difficult to access that part of the site. It needs more specialized equipment to access that part of the site as well. We have utility runs that we have to consider because you don't want to cut new utility lines through your brand new track. So we're running utility lines around your new construction. So something to consider when we look forward, or when we look at the idea of continuing to reduce scope on the project. So that's my brief summary on Pat. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
If I can borrow your point.
Sure.
Well, how do you cue it?
Just the red is the...
So, the last thing, and Trevor, I welcome your comments too if you want to join in on this, but with this restroom, or I should say this restroom and snack shack facility, the initial set of plans of DSA were inclusive of this thing called the switchback here. And this is that 88 path that Dave was talking about, going from the upper down to get to access this building here. So, there's a process to go through with DSA and the contractor that says if the outline red excludes this switchback, but there's a possibility that going through this exercise, the DSA says, you must do this. And if DSA says you must, come to my conversation with them on Friday and says you will not, that's an added expense. So David mentioned to you the $8.1 million. So the $8.1 million does not include this switchback here, and that's about an $815,000 line item. Okay? So that's just something else that, you know, that is on the horizon as well for this. So I talked with council about this process and an approach to this. The DSA's set stamp that you have for the overall set of plans, what Council shared with me is that you can do this in phased approaches. So when we bring forward this contract to you, these lease-leaseback documents to you, what I'm talking about is bringing to you phases. A base amount, which is inclusive of some of the reductions, the VE work that we've done with the contractor, the $1 million that Dave refers to. Another phase, which is inclusive of that building. And then yet a third phase, which potentially is, do we need to do this stuff too? And these items that the contractor has brought to us, I think they've added as alternates, David.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct, yeah.
So that's going to be kind of a tiered option, and it'll be a discussion next week. So I'm glad we have this evening to talk about it. We have a question between now and next week. We're happy to talk about it. But again, the doc we'll bring to you will have these tiered approaches, and it's permissive for us to proceed with the DSA stamp that we have on this and say we're going to do it in phases. Okay, so that's just one project you can talk about more. So
can I just add that Pat and I sat down with Tracy when we had this information on Monday. Tracy Ranieri, Principal Ranieri at Harbor High.
Oh, uh-huh.
She feels very strongly this is very important to their community. And understands that means they're going to be able to do less on other areas of the campus, but feels strongly that this project is really important to the high school community there. So I just want to share that. I promised her I would.
Can I just ask one quick question before we move on? I know that it had come before the board that we made the purchase of the portable restroom snack bar.
Yep.
Are we able to use that at a different site should the board choose to move forward, or is it such that because it hasn't been delivered, there would be a restocking fee?
I would think there might be a restocking fee, Patty, but my understanding is that it's not being built yet.
Okay.
Purchase order is in, but it's not in construction.
Because I was like, oh, if that's going to stay.
Trevor's validated.
That's it. Okay, thanks, Trevor.
Okay, please, David.
Okay. Harbor High School pool. So, again, we understand that we have a soils condition at the pool. So, I'll just run through this real quick. During the development of the project, the district and the design team looked carefully at the soils conditions, and we felt comfortable proceeding with the pool. I'm sorry, let me just explain this slide real quick. So, this is the gym, which is the existing location of the gym. That is the existing pool house there. Those are the existing bleachers. And you will see that we are essentially putting your new 40-meter pool in the same location that the two pools are currently in. And that made a lot of sense to us for a lot of reasons. When you replace a pool, you typically replace a pool where the previous pool was.
Yeah.
So just that is background. We looked carefully at this, felt comfortable proceeding with placing the new pool in the existing pool's location based on the following couple of items. Precedent. So the existing pool, pool house, pool equipment buildings were DSA approved and have existed in these soil conditions since their original construction. We think the pool itself, we don't actually have the actual drawings, but we think the pool itself was built in the late 60s or early 70s. Some of the other buildings around it have been updated or modernized or added, but they've all been there quite a long time in these existing soils. While the pool has settled slightly in the last 45 years or so, and it did suffer minor damage in the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake, obviously the pool is still functional, the pool was repaired, and it continues to be used. So when we looked at it, it just made a lot of sense that way. Second thing becomes a little bit of semantics with our with Division of the State Architect, or DSA, as referred to. And that has to do with what DSA defines as a building. So according to DSA, based on their regulations and my interpretation of the building code, the swimming pool, our proposed swimming pool, as well as the pool equipment building that we're proposing to replace the existing one, because we have more equipment we have to house, are not considered buildings. So the pool, because it's not an overhead structure, right? If you think of a building like the building we're in, a seismic or life safety issue involves the building potentially coming down on you or shifting in a way that makes it impossible to exit. We didn't consider, and according to our research, we didn't consider the pool to be that kind of a structure. Secondly, the pool equipment building under Chapter 10 of the Building Code, in our interpretation, is defined as a mechanical room, right? We don't have students entering the pool equipment building. It's just a maintenance. It's really something to house the equipment so that the sea air doesn't really start to rot your equipment. So based on those two things, we were very comfortable proceeding with DSA. But during the plan check process, so we submitted to DSA. We're awaiting plan check comments. They approached us, and they indicated that they'd reviewed the geotechnical report and had some serious concerns. As soon as we heard that, we rallied the troops. As Pat mentioned, Pat, myself, some of my engineers met with DSA. And just real quick, the interpretation they have sort of put forth on us is that, unfortunately, they have policies and procedures in place that we interpreted that say, in my opinion, that the pool is not a structure. They also have the authority to, on a case-by-case basis, make their own interpretation, and that's what the supervising structural engineer did in last Friday's meeting. The pool itself and the pool equipment building are considered structures in the same way a classroom building is considered a structure. Although this is counter to their standard procedures, they have the ability to overrule that, as I mentioned. DSA indicated that to proceed with plan check, they would require us to provide an engineering solution for the pool structure and the pool equipment building that will mitigate to the current standards for a classroom building, for example, forces related to liquefaction and lateral spreading. Doing so, I will just put really bluntly, is essentially an impossibility. It requires an just untenable amount of engineering to even prove that. I mean, basically they're asking us to tell them where the pool's going to go in an earthquake. Like, where it's going to go, how it's going to fail. And that becomes a sort of indeterminate calculation. We did run some numbers, and we talked to our geotechnical engineer about it, and basically the only way to deal with this is what they call soils modification. And a little bit similar to what we're doing for just the first 18 or 24 inches on the field would require us to remove all of the soil in the area of the pool completely, all the way down 30, 45 feet, and then remix it with concrete or lime or other drying materials, fill it all the way back up, then excavate it, then place your pool. This is something on the order of more than $4 million, just sort of hypothetically, of work besides the pool.
Yeah, besides
work, just to make that happen. So it quickly becomes a situation where DSA was telling us, you know, we really can't prove a pool in this location based on what their interpretation. So what I've done is I threw this together as quickly as I could. This is the same 40-meter pool. This is the gym. Mm-hmm. This is your existing pool where we just had the pool. This is the stairs that come down to what we call the lower quad. And this is the fine arts building up here and one of the smaller restrooms. So you can see that a 40-meter pool is a pretty tight fit. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossibly tight. We would be looking at potentially demolishing this building, which is somewhat underutilized at this point.
A weight room? Okay.
Yeah, it used to be food service. Now it's used as a weight room for sports. But this is really the only other, we took a quick look at it, it's really the only other viable location on the campus. There's the possibility that this might work with a smaller pool, but we wanted to present this to you as one of the options we could look at. So, Pat, is there anything you'd like
to add? No, I think so as well. I mean, I appreciate David putting this together, but you see, he said it's a tight fit.
Yeah. Well, and there's no bleacher space or external, all the external stuff.
Right. And I think you got that dotted line there, David, saying really 40 meters if you cut up a section of it.
We go 35 meters. We can lose one or two lanes and reduce the size. The bad soil, it's actually really interesting. The line between good and bad soil is actually very defined at your site. So the bad soil runs like this, right along the side of the gym, right through the pool, and then out over this way. following the gulch. So this soil condition here is actually very good as far as... Sorry.
Can we see the bad soil again?
Yeah. So
it runs along that creek line,
The edge of Arana Gulch and runs basically right through the existing pool deck and then turns through your bus yard and then continues up that way. And so this soil is a lot better in this location.
So the good news is all the other buildings are on good soil.
Is this building here and the bleachers are compromised, but that's very small. It's just a small restroom building. But yes, the gym certainly is not in that soil.
So a quick question on that. Assuming that we could move forward and have the dollars to move in this direction, do Xcel give us any costs that way? Because that would be basically building a whole new pool and filling back an old pool at whatever cost will be coming
in. This is the discussion we have to have. It says, what does it cost? Because you're right. There's demoing the old pool. You can't. Mm-hmm. I suppose you can leave that old pool as it is and not do anything with it, but it becomes, do you chlorinate it and heat it and all that stuff? Or do you demo the deck, take the spoils from the pool that you're going to build?
I think that should become the new entrance to the gym. We flatten that, fill it.
Okay.
That's the new entrance to the gym on the back.
So we have some major expenses for the wants that we came out with in the very far view. We have some very major expenses, and we haven't gotten to classrooms yet.
Right.
Well, we're going to get to, because I asked David to put in here the budget slide so you can see that slide. We'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to skip to that now?
Why don't you do the rest and we'll get to the budget stuff.
Okay.
All
right. For the next 7 weeks. So this is where I kind of resume what was going to be my standard presentation. I am really excited to show you this slide. This is Harbor High School, and we've been working pretty intensely at Harbor to establish a series of projects based on the bond and based on stakeholder input, as well as our own assessments of the site. And so we've selected a series of projects. And I do apologize, it's a little bit hard to read. I'll walk through it, though, real quick. And we've selected projects, and then we prioritized those projects. And so I'm happy to report that all the items in orange are projects that are either happening now or are happening between 2018 and 2019. And so I'll just run through them real quick. The athletic fields improvement, as Mr. Yaffe said, we're really excited, depending on how the board chooses. That is basically a shovel-ready project, and we're excited about getting that going. We've talked a little bit about the pool. I think there's some decisions that need to be made about how we run forward with the pool, but it has been submitted to DSA. The design is complete, and we could consider moving the pool if we needed to. Number three, not so glamorous, but really important to the campus, is the electrical service. So the existing electrical service is in really bad shape. Over this summer, and that's a little facility right there, we'll be replacing that. And that has to happen over the summertime because the school actually has to go down for a few days while they replace that service. Roof replacement. So bids are coming in, I think, next week. For roofs at this campus. I've got another slide I'll show you in a second that details the roof replacement. Student locker remodel. So one of the problems at the site is there's this canopy and there used to be lockers that are in really bad shape. There's some benches. And so one of the really big concerns for stakeholders at the site was to make an improvement. And so we're working through a design right now to provide a better locker, a more secure student locker situation along with some better seating arrangements. So that's also planned for summer of 2018. Tennis court remodel, that's this area here. It's just in bad shape, needs a top coat, needs some better equipment, so that's going to be happening, as I understand, this summer as well. And then these last two, we are in the design phases for, but they're considered critical, and that is this upper parking lot. There's some challenges with traffic circulation and flow in that upper parking lot, and some safety concerns. We really look forward to addressing that as soon as we get some of these other summer projects underway. Number eight is something that we're actually considering moving into increment number two, which is modernization of the math wing here, which is due for a light modernization. Then increment number two, as I'm calling it, increment number two, 2018 to 2020. Again, that's things we're starting to work on now, but maybe have a little bit later end date on them. And that's all the items in green. So that's what we're basically the lion's share of classroom modernization, as we've spoken about briefly. And then in blue, increment number three, after long discussions with site administration and with the district, those are more modernization work, some improvements to the quad, and then trying to get rid of relocatable classrooms wherever you can is sort of a tertiary goal, stretching out, you know, a little bit later in time. So that's Harvard High School. These are the buildings or structures at Harvard that are currently bidding for re-roofs. So we have the Humanities Building here, this Media Center Library, the science building, locker room, and then the two smaller restrooms, and this entire canopy, which again, these are also classrooms, or these are buildings that we're hoping to do some modernization on. So the idea is you always want to fix the roof first, make sure that nothing leaks onto your new construction once we get into modernizing. So that is roofing. All right, this slide was really incomplete when I put it in the packet, so I'm going to skip to this slide. And this is what Pat was referring to. So just the information on the left-hand column is the teeter information that was provided in terms of the cost estimates. Now, I need to explain the $10 million versus the $7 million real quick because it's a little misleading. It gets to be a little bit of a challenge when we compare the way teeter set up the projects or proposed projects versus what our actual projects are to accomplish the master planning goal. So when you look at the $10.5 million for existing building renovation, our $10 million actually includes, as I say here, included in existing included. So we've included some things that they had broken out into that $10 million number. And so really, when you add their $7 million plus school furnishings, plus HVAC, plus paint, that number is about $10.5 million as well. So we're kind of, our latest estimates are pretty even with what we think the cost would be for modernization. So I just wanted to make sure that wasn't misleading to the trustees. But the concern is, so looking at re-roofs, $650,000 was allotted. Our latest estimates, again, bids are coming soon, but our latest estimates are showing about $1.4 million for re-roofs. And again, we've talked about it at length. We were at about $8.1 million currently at the fields versus a $3 million original estimate by tier. Interestingly, the reconfiguration of the cafeteria, however, we think is not going to cost 1.2. It's going to be a little bit less than that. And so, generally speaking, just in this snapshot, obviously you can see the projects we haven't quite got to yet, we don't have estimates for. But I wanted to provide a snapshot. So currently, as we stand, I think there's about a $5 million delta between what the teeter numbers are showing versus what our latest estimates are.
And I would just add to that. So the discussion point is, so David has shared this $10 million number for classrooms, but there's not, what is the number? I can't see it. Okay, 33. We don't have $33 million to spend on that site. So the pool's underway, the field's underway, the roof's being bid. You know, when we get to the discussion about some of these other projects is the discussion. We'll bring it back again next week to put these decisions in context for you so we can have some dialogue around it too, because, you know, when we talk about we have $300 million of need, now we're looking at, here we have a 20, I can't get in the room, sorry.
Yeah, I apologize.
I can't see it.
This says...
Anyhow, we have to have the discussion. This is what we've been talking about. We have to have the discussion. The decision point says, do we do all the things in this project, or do we cut back? Knowing that, we've had discussion over sessions that we believe we'll need to go for another bond at some point, but now you're seeing the actual numbers coming from construction, and here it is. We won't be able to do $10 million in construction in classrooms. That will come with the current budget.
Just a quick question of clarification. You said for the math building, you have a light project. Is that L-I-G-H-T or L-I-G-E? I don't know.
Light as in not heavy.
Thank you.
She just had a question.
I'm sorry.
So I'm just trying to clarify. So the way you're saying it sounds like all the things that are increasing the prices are already underway, so there's no changing our mind on those?
Well, so this is the discussion too, Sheila. I mean, the discussion technically, and what I've said to the team is, you as the board can make the decision. One of your options, it says, do you move forward with these projects that are coming in at the cost they're coming in at? That is a decision you can make. Because what's going to come back to you next week is a contract to sign with a contractor for a particular price, the field. And if next week, so the field, there's multiple components to the field. There's the snack shack that Patty talked about. There is the independent purchase of the field turf that you voted on last time. And then there's this additional amount for the contractor to do all this work. Technically, you'd say, no. So that's a long answer to your simple question.
And if no, that's a good answer. And if you talked about doing it in phases, right? Is that what you said, phases?
Yeah.
That presupposes, it seems to me, that we're not going to find the same problem everywhere else, that we're not going to end up with high costs across the board, and that then we don't know if we're going to get another bond through or not.
This is true.
So it sounded like that was the only other solution.
So I think I understand your question, Sheila. If I don't, then you can help me understand better. So a couple things. The tiered thing has to do with the phases of scope of this particular project for the field. Kind of a phase one, two, or three. All in or scaled back. So that's a decision point. The bigger decision you have and you can make is to say, at this point in time as a board, if you want to forego doing this project, that is technically an option that you have. You've incurred expense to design it, but technically if the contract were to be brought forward to the board and the board said no to the project, then that technically is an answer you can have to the proposal. I'm not sure I'm getting to your question.
No, you think I actually have a good, clear, coherent question. I'm not sure I do. But it seems to me that if we're saying this is already going and the principal seems to think it's a very, then we are making a decision not to update our academic area. One way or the other, we're making a decision.
So
a lot less. It's a lot of $1 million over budget, right? I mean, it's.
Do you want to entertain? Jeremy wants to say something. Do you want to say something, Jeremy?
Yes, please. What is the recommendation, please? What is your recommendation? What is the recommendation of the district office? Can you give us our options clearly so that we have something coherent to think about? An A, B, or C? You said there were two. What is your recommendation?
Understanding the principal's feedback.
Yes.
Then I'm hearing from the principal from that site, who knows that site well, that she believes that we should move forward with the project.
The $8 million project that was initially bid out or projected at $3 million.
That's correct. Budgeted for.
Hence the $5 million discrepancy.
And if I could qualify
yes,
some of that information too, the feedback. The feedback is understanding that, to answer your comment, Sheila, that less work will be done on the instructional spaces relative to the budget, but also with the understanding and the comment that there was modernization done at Harbor High School in several classrooms in the not-too-distant past before my time. So that's the feedback from the principal. So to answer your direct question, Jeremy, relative to my recommendation is qualified relative to what I'm hearing from the principal, relative to her understanding of what the community understands this bond measure was to fund, and understand that there's this escalating cost of construction. Her concern was also she was concerned about the pool as well and wanted to make sure that a pool happened at Harbor High School.
Well, wouldn't we all like to have everything we want?
Well, a pool. I'm just sharing with you.
Maybe smaller.
I'm trying to answer Jared's question about what my recommendation is. I'm not sure what I said. Well, so I'm just sharing the feedback here with you for to help Sheila's and your question, me, Jared, which is my specific recommendation.
I have more to say, but
Didi's next.
So I have a question that I'm not sure who to direct it to. I can't see the number. It looks like you have a new estimate for the pool up there, or is that...
That is correct. So the latest estimate for the pool prior to soft cost, so this is, again, this is the way Teeter calculated with a basically a hard cost or a construction cost with a 22% adder for soft costs. So the construction cost estimate as we have it now is $5.6 million for the pool against their construction cost of 4.5 as estimated.
That's in the new place?
No.
It's moving.
No, that is before the DSA news came through about not being able to.
What was that? Say that again? What did you just say?
So the question from Ms. Parks was the $5.6 million number that I just talked about. Is that to put the pool in a new location, or is that the location that we submitted to DSA? And the answer is it's the location as submitted to DSA before we got the bad news from DSA last week.
So one of the things that Pat talked about is if it was smaller, it would cost less. So there would be less cost if there's fewer lanes.
Either place.
It can't go in the first place.
In the other place.
That's not an option.
But that's what that money is for.
Right.
Right.
Before DSA.
Yeah.
Right.
But some of the information I have just didn't work. This all just happened.
Yeah.
So we don't know how much that
would cost. I have a question. Yeah. Sorry. I need just to know that number to ask the question that I want to ask. Okay. So what I hear you saying is the costs are going up astronomically for a lot of reasons, but that you still believe that we may be able to do some classroom renovation.
True.
I'm trying to figure out the math here. Are we going to let go of some of these other things on the list for Harbert in order to be able to do those classroom renovations?
I think what will be valuable to you is for us to provide you a spreadsheet with the latest and greatest and tell you what the remaining dollars are that can be used for the classroom. I think that would help answer some of the questions.
And kind of what we could do with those remaining costs.
But again, as these numbers have been moving, inclusive of the discussion we've had in the past 2 days, the numbers are moving and they're estimates. So by next week, when we bring back a contract for decision, we'll have it in context.
Okay. Yeah.
More information next week.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Jeremy? Yeah, I'd like to be very clear about what I need to make an informed, logical decision. So I understand that there's a $5 million cost overrun, if you call it that, on the playing fields and the snack area and so on. I get that. The pool remains an unknown. So when do you expect us to have hard numbers on the pool, moving it to the place with the good soil?
I don't want to upset you, Jeremy, but it's a little involved, and David can help because there's steps in the process.
But it would be illogical for us to make a final decision until we had a clear number on that.
Right.
So for example, you couldn't expect us, I don't think it would be logical for you to ask us to take a vote to approve a pool in a new place if we didn't have at least a very strong ballpark number on it. So it's okay for you guys to say no, but will it be possible for you to give us that number by next week? That's
David, you want to take a swing at that? Because I can answer, but you're open.
So
Trevor's
answering
it,
not you, David.
By the 28th.
Well, let's...
And maybe further, depending.
Yes. The 28th is the Soquel pool for certain.
That's a different issue.
It is a different issue, which we haven't talked about. But
All right, I'm sorry.
No, hold on. I'm answering your question, Jeremy. And I'm sorry it's a lot of information to share. But we've had some discussions about things like some redesign fees to deal with some utilities and things like that that are going to need that cloth. But the cost for the infrastructure for the pool itself, I think for a 40-meter pool, somewhere in that ballpark is a number we'd incur as an expense. The added costs are going to be what's going to cost to demo the old pool and what do we do with it, and what does it cost to do the redesign? And let's say it's $500,000, just for discussion's sake. So as opposed to 5.6, we're talking about 6.1. Mm-hmm. So, but to bring you a contract with a stamp from DSA on it for the harbor pool, do I think that'll be done by the 28th? No. That's your question. So how long will it take? It's going to take more than that.
So might I propose that next week we simply vote on the field?
That's what we're going to do.
We're not going to be voting on a pool.
No. That's correct. No.
We're simply going to vote on the field.
That's correct.
Right.
And can I say one last thing? Sorry. But what I'm trying to do for the team is to put that decision in context. Because we have talked for the past year about when we make decisions, if there are cost overruns, we want to understand in context. Your question, every project that comes forward to you, you want to see it, the budget, the cost relative to the budget. So when you make that decision next week of this $5 million overrun, it's in the context of the overall budget. And what we said in open session two is that if we make these decisions, we need to let the community at large understand that. And that's why we had the conversation with the principal on Friday after I met with DSA, or Monday. So we're trying, because it's important the community understands if we're making decisions on these projects, then, okay, so I'm just, that's what I asked.
I do have one procedural point to make. Because it may be that this conversation, hopefully not, but needs to be repeated at other sites. Then the question would be the recommendation from the site, should that be the recommendation of the principal only?
Uh-huh.
Should it be the recommendation? Should it be the recommendation? I don't know. I'm merely asking.
That's
a procedural question.
Should that's
what
we've talked
about. All we had time to talk to between then and Friday and now was the principal.
I understand. But the board perhaps should think about who should be involved in that recommendation from the site. Mm-hmm. And possibility would be principal only. Other possibility would be principal and district office only. A third possibility would involve teachers, parents, and so on. So I don't have an answer. It's something that the board needs to think about. That's all.
And we haven't formulated an exact plan to address that process.
Right.
Jeremy, the other variable, which is an important factor for us in making this decision, because there's a timing issue.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the Harbor 50th reunion, homecoming game, So that's a factor too. That if we want to have it, Chris and I can dialogue that. It says what should that process be? Because we had a process to develop the recommendations that we use as a basis to ask the community for the bond. And so now we're at the juncture of now we have real costs come in that's going to necessitate that we have a dialogue with who we decide to have the dialogue. Okay? And we have a time to have a conversation.
And it's all going on Friday or Monday.
But the work we do on this issue,
that's right,
to be clear, will have perhaps, if needed, a very positive effect on if this comes up down the line.
And it will.
And my suggestion is that the board members take some time to discuss this. Now it's a little late, but at some point, what we would like, because this would be an area where the board, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, should have a word in terms of direction here. So, do we want to do that now as a board?
Okay, Cindy. Oh, I'm sorry, Dee, you were next. Then.
I think so. I would like to hear from my colleagues. And I'm looking at Deb, who knows Harbor very intimately,
because her kids were there, my kids were there. But everybody else, too. I really want to hear what your thoughts are, because I'm sort of like shocked. Yeah. I'm sure you guys have gone through that phase already. I'm there right now, shocked. What do you guys think? I mean,
should we go down the row? Okay.
Well, I mean, it's disgusting and frustrating, of course, but I just want to keep the overall thought of equity in place. Like, that is really what we voted on. That's what we're committed to. So it's not that we want a new pool. We actually need a new pool. And I'm a little concerned that now they know that we have a pool on some spreading liquefaction or whatever. Are they going to take it away?
Like, well, I didn't ask that question.
Are they going to shut us down?
It was on the tip of my tongue, but I didn't ask, because I got this guy so fired up.
So that's a concern for me. So it's not so much what we want. It's what we committed to the voters is an equitable experience for all of our children. So Harbor has more modernized classrooms than Santa Cruz High, I think, in some places. Yeah. So there may be some, I'm hearing there may be some give and take. We entertained the idea of a 50-meter pool, and we decided that was not something our community needed. And we really don't even need a 40-meter pool. Harbor High was going to be happy with the brand new 35-meter pool, which we sussed out. So I'm comfortable with those, but I think this was the fear that we had when we started the pool conversation last year, was the longer we wait to get projects going, the longer it waits for us to find out these exciting little information bits as we start to go. So my feeling is that I would like to try to honor the community's wish, and I know for Harbor High, it's the track is hugely important, that equity piece, the lights, and the pool. And I don't know how to get around it. I mean, I don't know how to cost. And I know everywhere we go, the costs are going to be astronomical. I feel like we really sold this bond mostly on athletics.
They did, yeah.
I really felt that was the athletic community came out, they walked, and I feel like that personally, even though I'm more into modernizing the classrooms, and my kids do swim, but it's not a huge priority in the family, but I just feel like it's an equity piece. So that's my thought. I have no idea like how to remedy the situation, but I think we need to keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Harbor High, but I'm more interested in the structure of the decision-making structure. And I would recommend that at any site, it has to have some students, some parents, some teachers, administrators, and that it shouldn't be difficult to reconvene that committee, students, parents, teachers, administrators, classified employees. I think if we do that, we've at least made an attempt to be representative. I think if we don't do that, we open ourselves up to
everything.
Various accusations that might become quite ugly. So I think the first step is to convene an ad hoc committee. And they're going to have to meet, and it's going to involve, you know, a meeting or two, which could take a week or two. But otherwise, I don't want someone saying, well, you did this simply because the principal said this or the athletic director said this. So we have to have a committee, I think. And maybe we should be preemptive and say we need to convene these committees at all the sites if we know this is going to come up.
I think so.
Okay, Patty?
Well, I'm very conflicted because I did quite a bit of work walking. I have people who know this. I reached out to children. I have people who call me and say, I just got my tax bill and I'm not happy, Patty. You better be showing me what's going on, and I, again, continue to reach out. I love the mindset always that if we're going to do a project, I'd like to do it well. So the swimming community has let me know from the moment I was elected and prior that in this community they would like more pools. But when we sold the bond, and as someone who did the work, the priority one was the field. And now in order to see the cost to do it marginally, we are well exceeding, just on paper, not on actual construction where we are. So I am thankful for what Jeremy has had to say, because I think that the reshaping will come to me not by what I'd like to see, because I'm so invested, but what the community wants us to do, knowing the problems. And it hurts, because I knew the cost would be larger, but I didn't think it would be to the point where we would be allowing for the opportunity for it to become a very divisive piece. If I would have really thought this through, I would have said just put three projects on the docket for people. But because we were reaching it, because we said it was important to hear what you wanted, and it really does crush me when we talk about the equity, because at some point I think that we don't look under the lens of, do all our schools have theaters? Do all of our schools have lunchrooms that students can go in that aren't wrestling rooms or choir rooms or whatever they are? So I will take what Jeremy has said and try and soothe myself in hopes that we can have projects that are done well and be happy with those, and know that those would allow for the public to believe in us to perhaps fund more further.
Cindy?
I'm just thinking ahead to when construction starts, we're going to see other numbers we're not going to like.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to see scope creep that we're not going to like. And we're going to see not necessarily liquefaction, but something else we can't think of. Like, oh, I didn't know the city put the water main right where we're in a boat pool. I was involved with a project where we were building a gymnasium, and we actually had broken ground on it, and we found that the city's water main went right through the site. We had to move the gymnasium after we had already started building, and we had to take off half of another building to fit in the gymnasium. So this is just the start of it.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Grace. The old blend.
Oh, I'm glad we
is going to continue well into construction. And we don't even have construction number estimates. Mm-hmm. But it's a messy business.
Mm-hmm.
It's really expensive, and we're not going to be able to do what we wanted to
everything.
Do.
Right.
So that's a given. So I think Jeremy's point is really important. Whether it's this campus or another campus, this project or another project, what's the decision-making, what's the recommendation building? And I wish we had a slide of it tonight. I didn't think to bring mine. But we have that nice org chart that you put together in terms of input and responsibilities, and we have some new hires.
Right.
And I thought in there, towards the bottom of that chart, were, I don't know what we called it here, but site committee.
Mm-hmm.
I assume there was a standing site committee at every campus. If there isn't, I think it's really essential that there be. And it would include the principal, of course. It would probably include an AD, probably include some teachers, probably include the custodian, and then be staffed by Trevor and his team and you. You come bringing that group always up to date with this kind of information and more detail, because they're right there on the site. So I think that's really critical as we go forward. And obviously the principal's voice is extremely important. But what I picture is the principal and these other people I've mentioned, they're around a table with plans more detailed than you're showing us and numbers more detailed than we're seeing tonight, and they're wrestling with it. Okay, we have $28 million, whatever it is, and we have these problems. What are we going to recommend? And that when we're asked to make those decisions, then the head of that group, be it the principal or whomever is designated as the head of that site facilities group, they're at the podium too, and they're talking us through what they see. So otherwise, I think it's sort of a shot in the dark for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
so that's what I'd like to see is those committees need to be ongoing at every school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there were groups put together as we came up with these types of plans from the facilities master plan. Otherwise, it's just a shot in the dark, and we're asking for a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get messy.
Pat just keeps coming into my office and says, Chris, breathe. I'm sorry. Yeah. For you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just breathe. It'll be all right.
So I hear Jeremy and Cindy, mm-hmm. and I really think what you're saying is important. We need more input than just one person at a site. Mm-hmm. But I'm also feeling very conflicted because you want a decision from us next week about the field. Mm-hmm. And the field is $5 million over budget. I'm conflicted. I don't know where
we'll be able to convene this school site.
Mm-hmm. So you'll talk to the folks at the site and,
yeah.
and get their input.
I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just say something? Just I'm out of
No, it's all right. I just want to make sure I get my turn.
Please,
it's
going to
get
so
late.
I'll
forget.
You
will.
I'll do it.
We need to go ahead, Pat. Go ahead.
Now I forgot what I was going to say. I'm sorry. It's so important.
Don't forget, Sheila. What did you
close to St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
There's always a possibility I'll forget, too. I was going to say what Jeremy said, but Cindy even brought it to a new level of doing it at every site. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that we can make this decision without bringing in some community buy-in and decision-making, because I'll tell you, when you said, you know, like you wanted to kind of give us the scope, for me, my scope is, I'm thinking 20, 30 years from now, how are people going to feel about us putting all the money into athletic facilities and not into the classrooms in the school? So then you say improvements have already been made. I'm like, really? Well, I don't know that. What improvements have already been made? What is the justification for the ones we think we don't have to make now? And I don't know that. And I have a hard time deciding that the educational part, I shouldn't say that because athletics is educational too, mm-hmm. but the non-athletic educational part is going to, you know, you say there'd still be some money left. I'm having a hard time finding it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like instead of 10 million, 0.5 million. You know, I mean, that's a huge difference. And I don't want to take, just like Jeremy said, I don't want to be sitting here making this decision and taking the word, no matter how good the principal is, of just the principal, that the community would prefer to have their buildings where their students are going into classes and the roofs and all that stuff left, and that's to have both a pool and a field. But I do understand that this is really important to them. So if you can have a meeting before then, that's going to really make a big difference. But I also feel like I need to know what improvements have been made. And what are the ones that we're deciding are not worth it? Why? And while we're at it, when you talked about the things you could take off of the track and field, I wrote down, like, well, you said reducing the lime treatment and reducing the retaining walls. I'm like, seriously? I mean, did we not have to have those in the first place? Like, how can we reduce them without causing some of the problems that they're there for? So I'd like an answer to that, too. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, with all the added expenses. And I do think that having input from a site committee is really important. And I think that our timing is really important, too.
Yeah.
So Cindy's idea of getting these committees in place and then setting priorities. What are our priorities at each site? So that when we get to there, we can make our decisions more quickly. Because the longer we wait with any of these, the more expensive it's going to get, and we know that. So looking at our options as far as when we're making this decision about the track, what would it cost to have a smaller pool? What would it, you know, where can we possibly cut back? And so those are my concerns, like the timing and getting the input and all the information before we make our votes.
So two things. One, thanks for all your feedback. We're at the juncture, so thank you so much. Chris and I were chatting about convening that committee, and I asked Chris who was on it last time, so we can reach out to those folks. One other thing to share with you, we did have a conversation with the contractor about timing. And if some of that scope were to be reduced, if that building were, if one of those buildings were to come out and just kind of qualify, because I hear what you're saying to do it, and I've said for years, if you do it right. I told Chris that when we start this program, when we do it, we're going to do it right. We're not going to cut corners, and we're going to do it right. Mm-hmm. But the contractor shared with me that if you did reduce some of the scope, like that snack shack building that wasn't done now, then he's not concerned. If we brought this back to the 28th meeting, he still thinks he can meet that 50th year anniversary if we got approval on the 28th as opposed to on the 7th. Okay. Now, I know Trevor is wincing back there when I say that, but that's what the contractor told me. See, he's wincing. But our goal
is to come back next week with recommendations from the site so you can make a decision on the field because there are some timeline stuff on that.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Pat.
No,
sorry.
No, it's good. I think we move on.
No.
Can I actually, before we move on, I want to add one question. It seems like maybe there needs to be a place for decisions beyond what the communities like or want, even though if I was in the community, I'd want that to be a lot of it. But I started to think, gee, it's a good thing Santa Cruz High already has their pool in the field, because I could see us going to them saying, well, don't do the boiler. Give us the pool. Or, you know, because it's something that everybody's wanted for a long time. But we know we have to do the boiler. We can't. That boiler is old. We'd have to do it.
So we're looking
and at every school, it seems like there might be things like that. And I was also thinking about the people who've talked to me in the last couple of weeks about, well, what does it mean that we have the bond in terms of the safety things that we now need? And I'm thinking, that's what made me think, you know, 10 years from now, if I have to justify this in the face of safety concerns, I'm trying to decide about, you know, making the pool a certain, you know, moving the pool to the other side and doing all of that. There has to be some place for what are the things that as a community's, the larger community's representative, you're willing to say can go or can stay, which is why I really feel like I need the list.
Okay, so I think everybody's had some input. Patty, you had something else?
I just have a quick question of the board, or one Mr. Pear Tree continues. I know that there's the SoCal High community, a couple people here. Instead of doing B40, can we move into the SoCal piece and then back to B40, if that's okay? I see them sitting back there. It's getting late for everybody.
Absolutely. Madam President, may I just ask a quick question, clarification for the minutes? The site committees that you have talked about, can we move? Would those have staff members or staff and parent members? So,
both, right? Am I speaking for everybody?
Yeah.
And I would just do we have a brief conversation with the unions about who the staff, who the classified and certificated employees are. It would be easy to do that.
Mm-hmm. I think we have an idea how to.
I mean, we had committees on the site.
Right.
Yeah.
So we want everyone to feel that they're represented.
I think we'll go back to that that concept of the, it was pretty inclusive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. SoCal High School.
I'll move on to SoCal High School. So, just a quick background, we submitted this project to DSA on December 22nd of 17. As of right now, DSA is about 6 weeks behind when they told us they would have our plan check comments back from the pool. So at this point, they are expected, the latest I was able to get was March 6th or so, is when we should be receiving plan check comments from DSA for the pool. As soon as we get those comments, we think that the earliest they will give us what they call a back check appointment, means that they give us the plan check comments, we digest those comments, we generate responses to those comments, and then we all drive up to Oakland. We sit down and we try to secure approval for the pool. So that's between a 2 and a 4 week turnaround. It takes 1 or 2 weeks for us to assemble our responses to their plan check, and then typically it takes about 2 weeks. They won't schedule an appointment typically until 2 weeks out, and during that 2 weeks we try to get everything done. So that would be the focus. Just walking through the pool design real quick. So down here is the turnaround. This is the gym building. So that's the engine turnaround there. We have a 40-meter pool in the same location as the other pool. We don't have any of the soils issues at this pool, so we don't expect anything at this point from DSA. Most of the, as it works, there are three divisions in DSA that provide comments. We've already received two of the three, and we don't have any indication yet that there's an issue, but of course, structural is the final one that we're to receive, and if there was an issue, they would bring it up, but so far there's been no issue. We don't anticipate an issue. There is no soils concerns at the site. So pool equipment room is tucked into this niche here, and we have about 15 feet of pool deck around. We'll have a new scoreboard as well.
So Dave, can I ask you, just with that being said, with the DSA delay, I know they were supposed to be accounts on the 28th, it's now pushed out to the 6th. You won't be back there till, say, the 21st. Yep. But anticipated mobilization, start of construction with that delay is...
Want to say,
so hopefully we can get board approval on the 28th, and we'll be ready to go that following Monday.
So April 1st?
That's Sunday. Sunday, April 1st.
Assuming that DSA delivers, right? We have no control.
Yeah, no. So you're on the... But you have two of the three hurdles have been cleared within the DSA scope. The soils have not presented any problems, so that we don't think there's going to be any left field for that part of the community. Does 15 feet allow for bleachers? Not that I'm changing anything, just curious.
Yes, it does allow, and that was desired by stakeholders and also recommended by a pool designer. So,
and then with this project, if we have something in moving forward for pool communities throughout the area, to know that at least a piece of one of the pool projects is going to be able to move forward. That is good for the political piece on what the community wanted coming forward.
I'll just mention really briefly, there has been a request, and we're happy to meet that request, for some folks at the site to take a look at the final design. And Trevor and I are working to get that scheduled as early as next Wednesday, but we have to contact the principal. But a request has been made, and so we're going to make every effort to meet with the stakeholders to provide.
Just so you know, they're having their WASC visitation next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so probably after Wednesday would be the best day for that.
Everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have Brian Saffori left. I know that I've taken an incredible amount of your time.
No, we've taken it.
This is big. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm trying to cover this relatively quickly. So Brands of 40, we use the same process we did at Harvard High School in terms of getting stakeholder input, looking at the master plan that was developed, and also taking our own assessment of the site with your facilities folks. And again, I apologize, I'll run through this, it's a little small C, but we are not quite as far along with Brands of 40 as we are with Harvard, but we've made really good progress. We've had a couple of stakeholder meetings so far, and we've established a series of projects. We haven't quite got to the point where we're prioritizing those projects, but I'm happy to report that we've got some projects that are hitting this summer as well to get started. So I'll just, for the board, I'll just run through this real quick. So these are not in any particular order as of yet, I will say, but right now, in this green area here, one of the major concerns at the site was vehicular access and campus security in this part of the campus. And so in a later slide, I'll show you that we're going to be making some changes to this area here, and this is slated for work this summer, which we're happy to report. This campus also desperately needs roofing. Mm-hmm. So we are currently bidding, I think bids are due on the 14th of March, for new roofs in these areas here, and I've got another slide I'll show you real quick that outlines exactly what we're doing with the roofs. Another major concern for the site was what they called curb appeal, or street presence. And so we will be planning to do some improvements along the frontage, landscaping, paint, other improvements to the building to increase its attractiveness to the greater community. classroom modernization also obviously features prominently in this, and so you know we're looking at modernization of all the major classroom wings, and we're currently working with the site administration to sort of pinpoint exactly what those things are. Vehicular access in the front here is really convoluted right now. That sort of parking drop.
Right.
Sometimes it's not a parking drop-off. Sometimes it is.
Right.
So we need to address that. We'll be addressing that.
It's like every school in USA.
Yeah. And then in yellow, there is really a need for better music practice spaces and better use of the NPR. Their current situation is pretty tough. And so we're thinking about putting a portable or modular building down to provide music practice spaces and making some internal improvements to the multi-purpose room. Library and science improvements, their innovation center is really an important piece of their culture. And so we're looking at ways that we can improve the interface between their current library, which is in the admin wing, to their innovation center, and making some improvements to their science classrooms, which are in a pretty tough spot right now. So we're looking at that as well. And then another desire was to make for better outdoor gathering, whether that's lunch, whether that's outdoor performances and things like that. And so we're really excited to focus our attention on what this sort of ground color is here, that quad area, and doing something there. And then, like all the other architects, you know, the campuses are talking about is trying to find ways that once we do a good job of reallocating space, that we might be able to get some portables removed from the site on a permanent basis and get rid of that old portable stock. So that's the overall picture that we're working on literally right now. We're excited about the grant support. And then projects that are hitting, again, I'll just go through this real quick. This is a detail of the parking lot, and we'll be providing access control into this area here. Right now the problem is that is a manual gate. That gate gets open for a certain amount of time in the morning, then it's closed, and staff doesn't want to park there because they have to walk out and unlock the gate to leave and then lock the gate again. There's no way for them to safely put the car out of the way while they do that, and so it's really underutilized that way. And there's some accessibility issues that are definitely need to be addressed. So we're looking forward to making that change. And then roofs. So what this depicts is all the higher roofs at the campus have already been re-roofed relatively recently. It's all the lower portions, so all the canopies, if you're familiar with campus, and all the low sloped roofs are in really, really bad shape. And so again, we're walking those roofs right now, we're bidding out those roofs, and we'll have bids in a couple of weeks. That is my presentation.
Oh, thank you.
I wish I had better news. I do apologize. I know it's a shock.
It's good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We won't shoot the messenger, right?
No, we will not shoot the messenger. Thank you.
But we are going to take a little break. I think 5 minutes to give us a moment.
Okay.
We focus.
Thanks, Chris. No, thanks. I have it. I'm good.
You know, the shortest agendas are always the hardest ones, meetings, aren't they?
It's not that short, though.
Well, but it was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is the touch base, this is the background, this is this. Everything in the consent's pretty relatively easy.
The consent was the short one, yeah.
For
but the rest was pretty
packed. We haven't voted that last piece yet, but still.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel bad for Pat, because I feel like every time he's walked in my office, obviously
starting on Friday,
yeah.
So that you can ruin your weekend before you
How can you even?
It's like that. It's beautiful. Once all summer, the pools were beautiful, feel beautiful.
And then the Harvard's one was something that was apparently that changed now when they did the renovation.
There are going to be choices to make. The regulations change, it won't affect the pre-launch. This year we have to get a set of the year.
I just want to make sure that you want to, whatever I want to do.
Can we
put
a
right there.
You want some coffee?
No.
Okay. I'm never hungry enough to actually eat diet guys.
All right.
Beforehand.
Yeah. So we're going to reconvene. Yeah.
Okay.
And this time it's the public hearing.
Okay. All right.
To approve AB 1200.
Okay.
Yes, I'll just go through this recommendation of the superintendent that the board approve the AB 1200. As proposed, really pleased to bring this forward tonight for our agreement with GSCFT. And this has been reviewed by and approved by the county office.
Good. Thank you. Any comments, questions from the board, from the public?
Good.
It's like, do we do a vote during the hearing?
Move approval.
Close the hearing and then we
yeah. That's what I thought, but it says recommendations to approve.
So you open the public hearing, you close the public hearing,
okay.
And then we take
all right. Okay, public hearing is closed and we are. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Student recommendations. Okay, so then
next is garland roofing. Then
so then garland.
Right, that's right. Okay, the next item is the consent agenda item 8.1.9.3. Jeremy?
No questions.
About the item that you pulled?
Yeah, it has to do with the fact that it was just a $579,000 item, and it's just a lot for a roof, and as I was sharing with a fellow school board member, it seems a lot, and we're spending a lot of money on roofs, and we're not even getting slate.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay, Patty.
Ugly rolled roofing, and that's just the way.
Patty has a light on.
Yes. So, and not in any elaborate detail, but I do want to know life expectancy. When we purchase roofs as homeowners, you can buy the 10-year, the 20-year, the 30-year, and whatever the expectancy is. Should the district have a problem that I'm not on the board or our current? Where do we memorialize these contracts so that the next person can say, my 25-year roof only lasted 15? Where can we go for recourse on the public dollar?
That's a really good point, because that's why we're using the roof that we're using. Getting 30-year guaranteed roofs without any special maintenance requirement whatsoever, unlike every other roof on the planet. The manufacturer's been around a very long time. The level of service we've been receiving over the last 3 years from this particular manufacturer to help us bring back our old roofs into warranty, but they lapsed and going out of warranty, has been exceptional. They've been there for us every step of the way. A particular product that has been chosen because it is the latest and greatest. It's not bleeding edge, but it is leading edge. The other product that we used to use a lot, that I used to specify for districts for years, PVC, is now coming under fire from all the environmental issues that it's starting to create. It's been banned in San Francisco. Given this new product is chemically different, it's more durable, it's stronger, and it doesn't have those same problems. It's, to me, the logical choice, because it is the best roof you can buy for all our low slope. Now, for some of our other roofs, we are going to clay tile because
that's
what needs to be there. Mm-hmm. And those will last a minimum. They can put 30-year guarantees, but I'm hopeful that all of these new roofs are going to go 40 or 50 years.
And you don't have to explain it out, but if you could just have some sort of overview of how we memorialize this process for warranties for future, when we talk 30 years, and I'm hoping to still be walking in the face of the earth, for who knows, so that these are taxpayer dollars that are buying these roofs. So, thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion?
Second.
It's a roll call, and we'll start with student.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Okay, next item is 8.3.3.2, the resolution.
No, another one. There's a tentative agreement.
That's right. Okay, sorry. Okay, 8.3.3.1.
So I bring forward to you all today our a tentative agreement between the DSCFT and Santa Cruz City Schools, and this is an agreement that we've reached, and you approved the $1,200, and proud that we were able to come together and resolve and move forward and look forward to more collaborative times and efforts, and that we will have one article coming hopefully by May about evaluation, and so we have an agreement to continue to work on that so that doesn't hold us up here, but we'll actually have contract language and a new system that we'll be rolling out to people for input hopefully next week, and excited about that work and take this opportunity to thank Casey and Matt who are here today on their team for leading their group and with respect and dignity and supporting the people that they're there to support and in just a very collaborative manner. So I'm happy to bring this forward to you for approval.
Questions? Comments?
Sorry. Molly and I are actually meeting tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. On the negotiations on the evaluation part, which we are really excited. We're redoing the entire article on evaluation.
Great.
So first I want to thank the team at Santa Cruz City Schools for working with us in a collaborative way. Of course, there were disagreements, but we got through them. And I want to especially thank the team. We had some glitches in our elementary piece, and the district was willing to sit back down with us to look at that, to come up with something that was going to work better for the teachers. We did, it was our first online vote, and so we had 215 teachers vote, and 206 voted yes and 9 voted no. And then we collected comments, and I sent these to the district and to all the teachers, and I've been so busy this week, but I'd be happy to send them to the board. The overall feeling, and I said this as I wrote an email back to them, was this feeling of great need. And so the resolution that you're going to look at in a little bit, and I'm going to go into bed, but it's a good resolution, is that, you know, it's ridiculous in California that we're the sixth largest economy in the world and we don't have better funding for our schools. Mm-hmm. And so when I send you the comments, you're going to see those needs from the teachers. And I did a word cloud of the SurveyMonkey does that for you, so you can see what words are coming up the most. And raise came up a lot, appreciated. Cost of living, because, you know, people said to us, you know, yeah, that's great, you got us a raise, but, you know, 2% isn't going to do much to meet the cost of living in Santa Cruz. Hard work came up really large and needing. And the elementary teachers are not excited about having the possibility of another meeting. I mean, it kind of varied on sites. There was a site that said to me, our principal will never have a meeting unless there's really something important and meaningful to meet about. And I think it really ties in with what we're talking about with MTSS and the day that we met at the retreat when we put up all the initiatives the district was doing. And that's what I hear from the teachers, is that there's so much. There's too much. And they're trained on this and that and this and that, and it's too much, and they're overburdened, and they're scattered. And so I'm really hopeful with the focus that Julia and Marianne are trying to get it pared down to maybe 4 areas to be focusing on, or maybe even less in a given year, because I'm really hearing that from the teachers, that it's too much for them. And they want, so they've said, you know, if we're going to do this meeting, this extra meeting, it has to be meaningful. Like, we don't mind if we go into this meeting and we come out and go, yes, you know, I can really, like, use this in my classroom. So what we're going to do is we're going to survey the elementary teachers next year, you know, throughout the year, and ask them, what are the content of the meetings? Are you finding them beneficial? And then we're going to share that feedback with district leadership to see if they're meaningful. And so I just, you know, wanted to give you those thoughts also. But, you know, overall, people are really appreciative. And I think the relationship that we're building that Molly and Chris talked about, I think that allowed us, for instance, when we had the snafu with the elementary piece, that allowed us to get back together and work that out. And so in the end, you know, I think overall most teachers were very happy and appreciative of the agreement.
Thank you. Sheila, did you have something?
Well, after that speech, of Molly and Casey. I feel like I shouldn't say anything, but I really wanted to say thank you on both sides. I think having been a teacher and now being on school board and feeling like I've seen this in all kinds of ways, this was really so cooperative. And everybody was also holding on to what was important. So I really appreciated it. And I'm really happy. Yes, it's still not enough. It's never going to be enough, really. But not in this town. But I really appreciated the cooperation that went into it.
A motion?
Move approval.
Second. Patty and Dee Dee?
Okay.
Thank you. Student recommendation? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I have it. So now we're on to 8.3.4.1.
Right. Okay, our our resolution 12-17-18.
So this is a resolution in support of accelerating the distribution of those Prop 51 dollars. Prop 51 is the legislation that brought matching dollars to districts for facilities projects, and the governor has been slow to sell those bonds and release those dollars, and our district will definitely benefit from access to Prop 51 resources, as will many of our sister districts across the state.
Questions?
I move approval.
Public? Anybody? Okay, go ahead, Deb.
I move approval.
Second.
Sheila.
Student recommendation?
Aye. Thank you very much.
Okay, the next resolution is 13-17-18.
Casey did a great preview of this. Mm-hmm. Full and fair funding. CSBA has a lot of information out there on advocacy for full and fair funding for our schools. We, you know, it's a celebration to say that we haven't had to make cuts over the last few years, but a lot of districts in the state are looking at that again, with the cost of STIRS and PERS increasing, and just like to support that we move forward in resolution that this is important for our students.
Move for adoption.
Second.
Aye.
I just wanted to comment real quickly that
there are
1,000 districts in California, and the intention is that on March 13th, which is the legislative day of action, when board members are invited to the Capitol, the CSBA reps will come in and with a stack of 1,000 pieces of paper, basically to deliver to the Capitol, say that enough, you know, is enough in terms of funding. I mean, it's symbolic, but I think it'll be important.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very important. Thank you.
For advocating. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Our Governance Board Policies Revisions from HR.
This is a... Molly, you want to go? Go ahead, Molly.
So it's our policy about, as it says, records and personnel files, electronic. So we're trying to get to the modern day, and we have sent out, per Ed Code, a chance for people to say they don't want it. They want us to keep their file. And we've been able to... We have all those ready to go. And if this is approved tonight, we have a shredding truck coming for over 90 boxes of files that will go tomorrow. Given space is always an issue, we are pleased in moving forward and working on a system for when new people are hired that it just becomes electronic so that we don't get this backlog. So there's still work to do, but...
A lot. Can I just clarify something for myself to make sure I understand? When you say, but current employees, you still have an actual file on?
unless they've already signed the paper saying go ahead and get rid of my file? Do you keep that until they're no longer employed?
No, we have current employees still files, but we already have sent that out to them. Mm-hmm. So when we get that process going, all we've done is digitize old files at this point.
Okay, thank you very much.
Questions? Comments? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
And a second?
Second.
Okay. Judy and Patty? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Governance CSBA delegate vote. Go.
So I'll go ahead and yes. Mm-hmm. You know, as part of our membership in the California School Boards Association, we have regional delegates. Deb has served as a delegate for the last 3 years, and she is nominated to serve again. And tonight, we have an opportunity to vote for her to continue another term as delegate.
And one other.
Patty.
So thank you, Dan, for the work you do and the advocacy. And we are tasked with picking two of the mm-hmm. three. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy that you're stepping up. I see that we have two of our feeder district people that would like to be part. And as I read through all three of your bios, it was wonderful. Everybody is qualified. But I would hope that the board would consider Donna Jones or Dunia from Mountain School. It's the first that we've had Mountain School participation in this way. I have been part of the SoCal Elementary School District, and I think the person who put their name in is a qualified candidate. But I'd like to see opportunity given to have a different voice and to be able to take to a different branch of our feeder district some educational pieces. And so I would hope that the board would consider Donna as the second choice.
Are you making a motion?
I wouldn't want anyone not to have a conversation around it first.
I was just wondering if Deb had a recommendation.
I know Phil because he has been a delegate longer, and he is a good delegate. He is very proactive for ROP and CTE. He has a lot of connections with the trades. He's really done a lot to bring recognition. And he brought Project Bike Trip down. He got them at the CSBA conference board. Having said that, I also feel like Donna's application was, you know, obviously she seems qualified. She comes from a small district. We don't have, you know, mm-hmm. it's a very different district than our district. So mm-hmm. But my recommendation is, I don't know. I mean, I will be honest. I'm loyal to Phil as a fellow delegate. He's done a great job. But it's hard. There are only 2 year terms. And it takes a couple terms, I think, to really mm-hmm. get it and make those connections. This will probably be my last term. So, I guess my recommendation is I'd like to let somebody else make the recommendation.
Should we vote on them one at a time then? Should we make a motion to vote?
I don't know.
for Deb and then?
I move to vote for Deb.
Okay.
Second.
I'm sorry, who was the secretary?
Me. And student recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So, now, it is optional to vote for two. We can only vote for one if we want to.
I would like to make the recommendation to vote for Donna, and with no, not anyone feeling this. But I do know both districts intimately. I was part of one and neighbor to the next. And would really like to see the opportunity. I appreciate the talk of the learning curve, but I think sometimes new blood gives new opportunity. And the bio on both were strong. But this one also comes from a different, with a much younger student. So I think there might be an energy for a long run with this particular recommendation. I leave it to you. There's no hard feelings either direction.
Mm-hmm. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Dee Dee seconds. Any conversation? Student recommendation? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain.
Was that seven?
Seven. Ayes, yes. And
are we done?
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Oh. It's been quite a week. Plus a weekend. We got that.
Yep.
It was on Friday.
Yeah.
That
was
too bad.
Yeah, that was too bad. But you know what?
Separated.
That's right.
We had a public hearing, and then we had the vote on the 8,1200. For me, that is the clearest way to do it, but it's not always the only way to do it.